It's Brian Noonan on 720 WGN, firmly ensconced, as always, in the Allstate Showcase studio on a bustling Michigan Avenue. On a day, let's be honest, these are the kind of days where you say, this is why I live in this city. Beautiful day. Temperature perfect. Blue skies. Nice breeze. Oh, fantastic. Happy Father's Day to everybody. Big show planned. It's always more fun when you get involved. 312-981-7200. That's the phone and the text. When you call in, you'll be talking to Cody. I may or may not be a father. I'm not telling anybody. Golf. He's the executive producer from Rockford, Illinois. If you're nice to him, you get to me. If you want to stay in touch with us via social media, please do so. It's Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. So there you go. Happy Father's Day, Roger. Good to have you along. I know this is the problem with the problem and one of the benefits of social media. I already know exactly what Roger did on Father's Day because he could not wait to post it. So, but for those of you who do not follow Roger on Facebook, and let me tell you, it is, Cody, would you agree? It is the follow of the century. Roger always has diatribes that are entertaining reading.
A lot of content.
Roger, not good on Twitter, but on Facebook, where he has unlimited characters, he can go. I think that's his forte.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, brevity, not your thing. But any long-form social media content, you excel. Did you have a nice Father's Day so far?
Yeah, it was very nice. It was eventful.
Well, you did laundry?
Eventful. Yeah, I had two loads of laundry.
Did some laundry. Two loads of laundry. Very nice. Yeah.
And not on a normal laundry day, though. That's what makes it unique. Normal laundry day is Tuesday.
Well, see? And I sit corrected. I did not know the significance of the two loads of laundry on Father's Day. That not only were you having to do domestic chores on Father's Day, it was a day you had not anticipated domestic chores. Was there a lot of perspiration the last few days? Was there spills?
No,
was there unnatural soiling of garments? What happened that led to
unexpected issues on the medical side?
See, now who looks like the bad guy? Well, not me. You still doing laundry on a Sunday. You posted about it. Very, very exciting. All right, so you start out with two loads of laundry, which I think we can all agree on a Father's Day, not a good start.
No,
that's not a good start at all on a Father's Day.
No.
So then you go, then what happened? Then you have to scrub the floors?
I had to do some maintenance.
Some maintenance
not too much, but enough.
A little something.
Yeah, a little something.
Did anybody treat you nicely?
Yeah, Bridget tweeted. Tweeted. She doesn't tweet. Yeah. She doesn't Facebook. She doesn't do anything.
My wife tweeted at me.
Right.
That's a happy Father's Day.
She was in the other room. She doesn't get out much, you know.
Oh, she doesn't need to talk to you face to face.
She said sorry as she left for the day. She went out with Dad's second wife and had a nice lunch with her and was still out when I left to come to work. David was out last night. He's feeling a little bit better, which is nice.
Right.
And came back to take care of Rufus, who was very excited to see him.
Good.
And so I didn't have to take Rufus out for his constitutional this afternoon.
Right. Wow.
And I did feed.
You paint the idyllic Father's Day picture,
yeah.
Roger.
I had my feet up. I was watching the U.S. Open. I was checking social media.
He's painting a story, Brian.
I know he's painting
That's
a story.
That's what we do.
No, I thought we fixed broken news.
Oh, dude.
I'm reading the wrong billboard.
Did we do both?
I don't remember.
Wow.
I don't get the memos anymore.
Do we paint broken stories, too?
No, we don't paint broken stories. We paint fences at Roger's house. We do all sorts of domestic chores on Father's Day.
So we fix Roger's fence.
We fix Roger's fence.
Got it.
And then that's where we gather. Right. Then we gather at the fence and we talk over it.
There you go.
That's all the.
So that's pretty much it.
Because we've been social media since 1847. Right?
1847.
I think that's when this story started. Isn't it 1847?
Wait a minute. You asked.
I did ask.
You know better than to do that.
No, I should, but really, I'm just tired and I didn't want to talk.
There you go.
So I figured I'd ask you
what
questions.
What did you do today?
Nothing. I got.
Did you get cards? Did you get nice gifts?
I had a very nice... I'm wearing one of the gifts. I picked it out myself.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. I will say this. It's been a very nice day. Yesterday, my wife had gone out to where we used to live to get her hair done, and she stopped at the Italian market that we used to go to, and she brought back Italian sausage, and she said, oh, I brought some stuff that we can have for lunch tomorrow before you go to work. And I said, that's great. Are you grilling it? And she said... Well, no. I go, oh, and I jokingly said, oh, so you're going to make me grill on Father's Day? Which, firing up the grill and doing Italian sausage is nothing. So I got up this morning, and she had, when we were in New Orleans, I know this is jumping around, but it makes sense. We were in New Orleans. We went on the ferry across to Algiers Point, and we came back. And you get on the ferry in New Orleans, right at the bottom of Canal Street, and there's a big outlet mall. And there was a sign, Tommy Bahama Outlet Mall.
Ooh.
And so when we got on the, or Tommy Bahama Outlet, so when we got on the ferry, I said, hey, when we come back, do you mind if I run in? Because she had to run into a different store. I said, can we just run in and take a look? I'm not going to get anything, but I just want to see, you know, if they really have outlet prices. So fast forward to, they did have good outlet prices, and my wife said, pick out a couple shirts, and that'll be your Father's Day gift.
Wow.
And I was like, all right. So I tried on a couple. I said, I like this one, this one. What do you think? She goes, yeah, I like the gray one, and that other one you picked is great. So there was my, I picked out my Father's Day gift. And nice. She had it in a nice Spider-Man anime bag, which was phenomenal when I got up. And she had gone. Now, on Mother's Day, you might remember, I said I got up and went to Weber's Bakery at 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping my wife did not do this because I've been trying to be good. But bless her heart. She was at Weber Bakery this morning at 5:45 and got some chocolate donuts.
Sweet.
Yes, they were, oh, very sweet. Delicious. So I had some chocolate donuts, took the dogs for a nice long walk, got a call from Molly, which was nice, and then grilled up the sausage, had a nice lunch with my wife, and then came in here.
That's sweet.
Yeah. Now
we did the family dinner yesterday.
Oh, that's
because I knew there wasn't going to be time today because
that's good.
By the time I got home and then had to come back to work. So.
Right. Well, that's good. At least they paid some attention to you. I didn't want you to think that they...
We got, and of course, you saw Rufus got me a card.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah, I posted that up there as he was, like, passed out on the rug in front of me.
So my dogs, I'm lucky they don't kill me in my sleep. I don't expect any gifts or cards. I just expect undying gratitude and loyalty if I try to sick them on someone. But it was nice. So I hope everybody is enjoying Father's Day. Did you take care of you? Did you remember it was Father's Day, Cody?
I did. I called my dad.
Called your dad? That was very nice. Listen. Speaking of your dad, can we a quick shout out to Cody's dad, who we know from the past, we've talked about it, he's a bagpiper. Mm-hmm. Cody's dad's been a bagpiper since bagpipes were invented.
Wow. It's been a while.
It's been a
long
while.
Time.
He's been bagpiping for quite some time, and he won some big thing yesterday.
He competed at the Chicago Highland Games yesterday in Itasca, I want to say.
Yeah, Itasca is correct.
And won a first place medal in one of the categories.
Hey, all right.
Go ahead, right there.
The last time he won a first place medal at the Chicago Games was nearly 20 years ago.
What?
Wow.
And that's not normal. Most of the people that compete and win these medals are in their like 20s or 30s.
It's a young man's game, competitive bagpiping.
Yeah, because bagpiping takes a lot of dexterity.
Yes.
I mean, I've played saxophone, clarinet, trumpet, stuff like that. The fingers, the dexterity of bagpipes is probably, I think, greater than for a lot of the technique.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's tricky. But yeah, he killed it. So super exciting.
Congratulations to your dad.
Yeah, and I didn't know this. Every year, the Chicago Highland Games is Father's Day weekend.
Is that right?
Apparently for the last 25 years, according to my sister. So so if you ever want to go and you want to do a fun thing for Father's Day with your family, well,
take them up there, see people play bagpipes, throw the telephone pole. What's that called?
The caber toss.
The caber toss. Yeah. I always like that. Then they've got a big, heavy cannonball on a rope that they throw, on a cable. They throw that. It's some other kind of thing. Do all sorts of stuff. I know there was an outing, a station outing there on Friday.
Ah.
Yeah.
I was not able to go.
Yeah,
but because they had sent me a text to ask me to go, and then asked what size skirt I would need.
Skirt?
Yes. To which I responded, "Well, how do the kilts run?" Because I didn't want you to
yellow.
I almost got you involved because I knew it would get your hackles up.
They called it a skirt. Hackled me pretty voraciously.
And when I brought that up to management, they just laughed it off. Ha ha! Skirt.
Hmm.
I was like, all right.
Was your dad in full regalia?
Usually,
your dad's always in full regalia.
He usually is, yeah.
I
would presume all the competitors are in a kilt for that.
I remember when the Highland Games first started, it was held over in Grant Park.
Oh, is that right?
It was a very small affair, and it started in Grant Park for the first several years, and then it's been moving around as it's grown. It's needed more area as the crowds have gotten bigger.
Well, now they've taken it all the way to Itasca.
Yeah.
It's all ready to go. Well, congratulations to your dad, Cody. Congratulations to you on your wonderful Father's Day, Roger.
And to you, sir.
Well, thank you. It's very nice. It's hard, and I know, dads, if you're going through this, It's rough when your kid's not around on Father's Day.
Yeah.
Now, it's been the last 3 years Molly's been gone. Mm-hmm. She's been in L.A. last year and this year. She was in Costa Rica the year before that. So I haven't seen her on Father's Day in a long time. And I know a lot of dads and moms, too, on Mother's Day, you go through this where your kids aren't around. And it's a little bit tough. And it's also tough, too, you know, well, we'll talk about it. I want to know, dads, did they come through for you? Or was it the usual, hey? Because I believe deep down that fathers do get short shrift in this society. We'll get into a little bit of that. 312-981-7200. A little more Father's Day talk on the other side. It's WGN. So we're talking about Father's Day. Hope your Father's Day is going well, whether you're a dad or someone who has filled that role of dad. It's tough, as I started to say, when your kids are away. But you kind of get used to it. And it's, I don't know. I've thought this for a long time in the media and for a lot of reasons. I think fathers kind of get short shrift. And I know a lot of dads are going to go, well, listen, we don't want any sort of big pageantry. We don't need a lot of gifts. And I'm that way too. You don't have to make a big fuss. But I just think the role of fathers in a lot of places, especially if you watch TV a lot, fathers are portrayed as buffoons. And, you know, they don't care about anybody but themselves. It's all about them. And that can't be further from the truth. I know it's funny TV, but it's rough. And I know there's a lot of guys who fathered children, took off, and did not do what they were supposed to do. But it's important being a father. I think it's important for kids to have a father. And it's hard on days like this. And I know, Roger, and I know I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I'm in the same position. When your dad is gone, it's hard on Father's Day. And you see all these posts with people with their dads, and you're happy for them. And then you realize, oh, man, my dad's not around. And mine has – now, yours, it's much more recent than mine. But it's still rough today. And it's rough on Mother's Day, I understand, but we're talking about fathers today.
Right. And I think – I understand what you're saying. And I agree with it. I think that one's reaction to this day, if they've lost their father, is dependent on how much time they had with their father.
Right.
And the life they had with their father. Two influences. So dad lived to be 1 month into his 100th year.
I was going
to
say, he was,
yeah.
Yeah,
he was 100. He did a lot of living. He did a lot of things, and I'm old enough now to have been the beneficiary of everything he had to give his children.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying? And I'm not talking financially. I'm talking about his insight, his help, his compassion, his connections, his whatever. He didn't have anything more to give other than his companionship and friendship.
Yeah. I'm at the point where I look now on days like this and I think of all the stuff my dad missed. You know, he missed most of his grandchildren. Mm-hmm. He missed watching my brothers get married and grow up and not grow up. They were, you know, they were late teen or in their 20s or early 30s when he passed away, but there's a lot that he missed.
Right.
And then you also fight that urge to kind of romanticize everything.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, let's be honest. I'm reading every Facebook. Every dad's not the best dad. Because that takes away the best. You can't.
Right.
Yeah, they're the best to you. I'm kidding. Of course, everybody thinks their dad is great. Unless your dad's a jerk. And and there are people who think their dad's a jerk. Bob wants to jump in on this real quick. Or Rob. Hi, Rob.
Hey, happy Father's Day to everyone
happy
out
Happy Father's Day to you as well.
My wife gave me a project to clean out the garage. So today, she saw that I had a box that's 4 feet by 4 feet by 4 feet. It's a big box.
Yeah, that's a huge box.
Yeah, and she goes, I told you to get rid of all that junk. And I said, I go look inside the box. And she goes, oh, my God. She goes, I gave you that for Father's Day like 10 years ago. I go, keep looking. She goes, oh, my God. She goes, Christopher gave you that? Sandy gave? She goes, you've kept all your Father's Day gifts. And I go, yes. And I go, you just told me to get rid of that box of junk. In other words, Father's Day gifts, I have some of the funniest Father's Day gifts. I mean, I have a tie that lights up and on. I mean, my God. I have socks that have lights on them and bells. I mean, you know.
Yeah, all the stereotypical Father's Day gifts. I'm sure there's a mug or two in there.
Tons of those.
Yeah,
you know.
See? But I think that's terrific, Rob. And you know what? Down the line, you know, that's going to mean something to your kids, too. It means a lot to you. It's going to mean a lot to them that you held on to all these crazy things.
The best thing about
it
is I'm going to re-gift it to my kid when they get married to that kid.
Perfect.
That's what I'm going to do. Hey, great show, guys.
Thanks, Rob. Happy Father's Day. All right, let's do this. And then it's we don't have to go right to do it. We can go for another minute or so.
It's a Father's Day miracle.
Brian, I totally agree with you from the 708, and it's important to revere the role of fatherhood as much as we do motherhood, so that men understand what a tremendous role fatherhood is. And it is important. And it's you know, I think back now about things that my dad said, and you know, he didn't always get me. And I think that's the way with a lot of dads, especially from a certain generation. You know, now guys younger than me who were dads, they have a different outlook on things than guys in Roger's dad's generation, my dad's generation, and man, even your dad, because you have older brothers and stuff, so your dad's a little bit older than that. But they have a different way of looking at things, and my dad didn't always get me. A lot of times he didn't quite understand my career path, because he was one of those guys. He went to work for the Board of Education, and he worked there his entire career, and he worked very hard, and he just kept moving up. And so for him to have a kid who, especially his oldest, who was going to go into this crazy career, but as much as he didn't get it, he always supported it. Like, I remember him coming out to see shows. And he came out, I was doing my first week at the Improv when there was an Improv here, and I heard him laugh, and then the headliner went over and told my mom and my dad what a great job I was doing and all of that. And we were together once, and somebody recognized me from a show, and my dad was like, "Does that happen to you a lot?" And I was like, "It happens, you know, every once in a while." But he always supported me, no matter what, which I think that's the most important thing as a dad, and that's the one lesson that I tried to, one of the lessons that I try to pass on now that I'm a dad, you know, and my daughter is trying to travel down the same crazy path, and I'm being as supportive as humanly possible.
Well, you already know the pitfalls and joy of that path.
Well, I know the pitfalls. I'm waiting for the joy. The joy is going to come one day somewhere around the corner. All right, on the other side of the news, I saw a story, and I thought of our very own Cody Goff. We'll get to that, and how the man is trying to once again target millennials. So we'll get to all of that if we can in the next half hour. Then we'll have great Irish music after 7 o'clock right here on WGN. We, after 8 o'clock, of course, Karen Conti will be back. Yes, she's back this week, so she'll be answering your legal questions. If you have some sort of Father's Day-based legal question or any legal question, we'll get to that after 8 o'clock. Rory Makeham will be here after 7. Wonderful, wonderful Irish musician. He's been on the show before, a good friend of the show, good friend of ours. He's appearing at Irish Fest at the Irish American Heritage Center. We'll talk to some folks from the center as well. Oh, my goodness. I'm sure they'll be heaping praise on me, Cody. You know, I just came off that big Hall of Fame weekend, so.
Yeah, you were on the lips of all the stars.
Yeah, sure. One of them at least. That's all that matters.
Wanted to make sure he said your name right.
I know. Well, he said my name right. I said his name right. I said
yes, you did.
I said his dad's name wrong.
Right.
But I said his name correctly.
Yes.
So I need a little credit for that.
You get a ton
of
credit.
I don't want any credit for that. I'm just doing my job, Roger. That's how I feel every time I'm here. I'm just doing my job. I don't need any credit. I don't need accolades. I don't need glass awards. I don't need the respect of my peers. I just need to do my job.
That's exactly what you're getting there.
Well, and I'm in the perfect spot for it. Absolutely perfect spot. And Cody's back this week. I don't know for how long. This is a, we don't know, how long are you back?
I am not taking that much time off this summer.
You're off a lot.
I forgot who he was when he started talking. He's been gone so long.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
Was it 2 weeks, or were you only gone 1 week? You were here a week, then you were gone a week.
Well, yeah.
So if the pattern continues, you're not here next week, or you are here next week?
All right. The one I missed 3 weeks ago, there was a flight debacle.
Sure, that was not your fault.
It was air travel.
Air travel. We hate air travel.
No, it wasn't flying United.
No, because they would have beat the hell out of you.
Exactly.
If you were flying United, they would have dragged you down the aisle and pummeled you.
Exactly.
No, you came off the flight fine. So it was not United. It's beautiful seeing all the people out with their dads today. That's very nice. Young children walking their father down the street. Good for them. Enjoy your Father's Day. Cody is in the middle of planning a wedding. Do we remember that? We all remember Cody is planning a wedding. I saw this story. It was a column by somebody in the Tribune. Why is planning a wedding more stressful than having a baby? Yeah, so that's something. So if down the road you decide you and your bride to be decide that you're going to become parents, just know it'll be less stressful than what you're going through now, according to this.
Sweet.
Are you feeling a lot of stress as it gets closer and closer?
There have been a couple times.
Who's getting their way more? Are you giving in to your fiance and letting her call all the shots wisely and stepping out of the way? Or are there things that you're trying to battle for?
Oh, I'm groomzilla.
Are you really?
I'm pretty bad.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, when
we were choosing a venue for the wedding reception, I had a spreadsheet on Google Docs. It was literally 30 or 40 rows with about 15 columns.
What were the
comparing
columns?
Prices, what catering options there were, what kind of alcohol options there were, whether we had to pay for security, the proximity to hotels, whether it was at a hotel. I should sell it.
You really should.
If you're looking for a wedding, email cgoff@wgnradio.com. I will get rid of it for...
Right, he'll give you the spreadsheets.
Yeah.
Well, no, that makes sense, but that's... All right, so then You were doing research, which is admirable. You were trying to, but were you exercising a lot of control over the final decision, or did you acquiesce?
I was exercising a fair amount of control, I think. Well, I mean, we both wanted a place that we liked.
Okay.
You know, we both like history, historical places, and you know, we didn't want to have it anywhere that was too expensive or things like that. We wanted to make, and we found a great venue and a great reception venue.
Nice.
So it all worked out really well. Yeah. But then after that, I was kind of like, all right, now you want to find a photographer, go for it.
Yeah, so you're stepping away.
Stepping away a bit.
Is the wedding turning out to be what you imagined your wedding would be, or are you getting input from your side of the family and your fiance's side of the family, and it's changing what you guys wanted to do? Because that was the gist. One of the points of this column was, you know, we had this in mind, and this author was trying to be a quote-unquote cool bride, so she was kind of going along to get along, and then she realized, wow, this isn't really the wedding that I wanted, and the wedding kind of overshadowed the big decision of getting married, which she says, so now that she's expecting a baby, she's saying the stress is much less because they're focusing on the big picture, which is being parents, rather than the little details, which is what made the wedding so stressful, focusing on all these little details and sweating them and letting other people have their say, and all of a sudden you realize, well, we're not even focused on the being married stuff. We're focused on this one day.
That's true. Well, I do want to do the pre-Kana classes.
Oh, yeah.
Did you do those?
We did. We did.
You were kicked out, weren't you?
I was not asked back. So my wife converted before we got married. That was her decision, not mine, because I was like, I don't care, to be honest. It didn't matter to me if she converted or not. But she wanted to. So she converted, but then we went through these pre-Kana classes. And the only thing both of us remember, it was in Michigan, and it was this over two-day thing. One of the women who was running these classes said, and I might be a little off on the wording, but the gist was, a good wife should pay attention to her husband and not drink too much. That was, and once we heard that... Well, first, Debbie wasn't listening to me when I tried to get her attention because she was hammered. And I was like, you don't even get – you're never going to be a good wife. Look at you. You're all drunk and not paying attention. But what is that? What kind of intent – how does that set you up for success in a marriage? Listen, you're the wife. Just pay attention and don't drink too much.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's – if you want, you can consider that I just put you through the class. Just tell your fiance what I just told you about being a good wife.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what they said about being a good husband. I think they focused a lot on, you know, the wives.
This is not good.
It's not good. Again, no, Grant, remember, this was 26 years ago.
Yeah.
And it wasn't... Times may have changed.
And in Chicago, I'm imagining if we do it through a parish in Chicago, it'll be a little bit more progressive and liberal and...
Are you saying that some rural Michigan camp that we went to, that it's like some weird survivalist camp that we went to for our pre-cana is not progressive?
I mean, not to generalize, there is like literally a church on Belmont that has specific services for the LGBT community. So I'm guessing that would qualify as a little bit liberal.
All right. Well, I want to find out because perhaps if this is the line that is still being taught today, I want you to come back in here and go, hey, you know what? They told my fiance not to drink too much, too.
Mm.
So
great. Can't wait.
That'll be fun.
But I think by even signing up for it, and from what I've heard from others, it's kind of a nice ground set.
Yeah.
To say, you know, here are a few things you might want to think about since you're going to be together forever.
Because that's the goal, to be together forever. I know how easy it is to not be together forever. Happens all the time. But the goal is to be together. Nobody goes into this thinking, I'm just going to put in a couple years. It's not like a millennial on their career path where you put in a few years then you jump to somebody else, right? This is one of those things where your hope going in that it's going to stick.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I get what you're saying, though. It would be easy to... And I've had a couple kind of check-in moments with her where I'm like, you know, you still want to marry me, right? Like, this is still, we're still on the same page about, you know, spending time with each other, living together, all that. So, like, that's the, and it's always a yes. But once in a while, I do kind of just step back for a second and I'm like, yeah, you know, and on top of all the food we're getting and the music and the photographers and the invitations and all that, there is the after part.
Yeah, because that day goes away. That day goes away, and all of a sudden, you come, if you go on a honeymoon or maybe you don't, but. Then reality starts, and it's like, oh, wait, I'm not the center of attention anymore. The world's not fawning over me because I'm wearing a white dress or a tux or, you know, it gets weird. So I saw that, and I know that you've been going, you know, the plans are going along, and you seem pretty calm about it.
Well, her family's on the East Coast.
Yeah, so they're
and
not here.
My family's in Rockford, my parents will give as much help as they want, but, like... They don't need to. It's such a hassle.
Yeah.
If you want to be a control freak about somebody else's event, that's fine, but it's gonna take a lot of effort.
Right. Oh yeah, you got to be involved all the time.
Yeah.
And plus, they've gone through. Your brother's got married. Mm-hmm. How many of your siblings are married? Just one.
How many of my siblings are married or have been married?
Well, all right.
Wow. There have been a couple weddings, okay, let's just say.
Yeah, let's just put it down. Your parents have gone through some weddings before yours. Yours is not the first. Like, ours was the first one.
And oh,
so,
really?
On both sides, yes. So, because I'm the oldest and Debbie's the oldest. So, all ours were the first weddings on both sides. So, everybody, is that for me?
Could be.
You could check.
We have a guest coming in. Soon.
Oh,
after the news.
Is that right?
Yeah.
We have guests?
That's what I heard.
I don't know. I gotta look at the legal pad. I have no idea what's going on anymore. All right, let's do this. And then when we come back, millennials being targeted by the man once again. And I know Cody is a little past the millennial age, but I want to get your take on this too, because it seems, and you're a marketing guy.
No, I am a millennial.
Are you?
Technically, yeah. All right,
then you will, you'll enjoy this. But I'm reading this and I'm thinking, boy, this is so transparently horrible. I can't believe somebody thinks it's going to work. But we'll find out on the other side. It's WGN. According to a new study, cereal companies, because their sales are down, are starting to target millennials, hoping that the millennials will now boost the sagging cereal market. They're trying to expand past the usual kids market when it comes to the sugary morning cereals. So, according to the founder of the Austin-based Center for Generational Kinetics, which, Cody, I know you follow their newsletters religiously, millennials are still buying for nostalgia. They're saying things like, I'm longing for my youth now that I'm oh so old at 28. Do you believe that to be true? A man who's now 30, what, 32?
Ancient. Hey, I'm in the 25 to 35, according to my
That's
ancient.
All you need. 25 to 35.
Yeah.
That's all we need to know. Do you long for the old days of your youth? All the 10, 12 years ago?
I'm trying to remember
it's
my
a long
youth.
Way away.
It was a long way away.
All right, now as a marketing guy, see if you think this is as weak as I do. Kellogg's, and I love Kellogg's cereal. I love Frosted Flakes. I love, you know, I love them. But they're launching a new consumer campaign for Fruit Loops. And I'll tell you something. When I was a kid, I couldn't get enough Fruit Loops.
Same.
I love Fruit Loops.
Oh, yeah.
Granted, as an adult, I haven't eaten Fruit Loops. And whose fault is that? That's my own. I don't know why. Toucan Sam, still an appealing character. Nice Fruit Loop, bowl of Fruit Loops in the morning, that'd be fine. But this is the first time in 50 years they've changed their marketing for Fruit Loops. That might be an indicator right there. You go, well, maybe it's not the millennials. Maybe it's just, it's been successful for 50 years, so we kind of coasted. But that neither here nor there. The new tagline is, whatever fruits your loops.
What?
What was the old tagline?
I don't know. I don't know, because I just knew it was Fruit Loops. I knew
the tagline was Toucan Sam. That
no,
was
he was the
I know he was the character,
he
but
was the guy.
That's who they focused on.
Right.
Yeah.
But they had to have a catchphrase, didn't they?
I don't remember it.
Some sort of catchphrase?
No.
Yeah.
Not for Fruit Loops.
According to the internet, the slogan was the flavor of fruit wherever it grows.
Yeah, no, that didn't work.
Yeah, that's, I don't know.
It's not like magically delicious.
The voice of Toucan.
Frosted Lucky Charms are magically delicious. Right.
The voice of Toucan Sam was Mel Blanc?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. So either way, Fruit Loops still very successful. Everybody knows Fruit Loops. You say Fruit Loops, I can picture the bird. I can picture the red box. I can picture the beautiful bowl of colorful circles. But whatever fruits your loops, what does that mean? Now, granted, I'm not the target audience for this. Neither are you, Roger, unfortunately. As you eat, it looks like you're eating a bowl of Fruit Loops. Do you have Fruit Loops?
I'm eating my Caesar salad with nice skirt steak. But I did have Fruit Loops yesterday morning.
Did you really?
Yeah, and I had Frosted Flakes this morning.
Look at you.
Wait, it was follow your nose, it always knows.
Yes, follow your nose.
Oh, there you
knows.
Go. Yeah,
the
yeah,
flavor
yeah.
of fruit wherever it
See
grows.
See how that works?
That's, yes. Yeah. Follow your nose, it always knows. Okay. So now, we are not the target audience. If I was, I would say this is one of the dumbest slogans I've ever heard.
Well, go ahead and say it.
Well, it's one of the dumbest slogans I've ever heard. We turn to our resident millennial. I hear he's in the 25 to 35 age bracket, according to his agent, which is paying off very well for him. You might want to look at a different age group. What do you think of this this slogan? As a millennial, as a guy who's engaged in social media, as a marketing guy, do you think this will be effective for your age group? Do you have a hot take on this?
My problem in marketing has always been that I don't always know what's going to be effective because I'm never affected by that stuff.
Correct.
I know Fruit Loops is not as healthy as hard-boiled eggs, so I'm going to eat hard-boiled eggs for breakfast.
All right.
I don't buy into this stuff. I don't buy into brands. I don't care if it's an off-brand. I'm not going to spend $19 on a pint of Breyers when I know I can get Edie's for $4.
Are you spending $19 on a pint of ice cream?
I'm not, and that was a bad example.
That was a horrible example.
Also because Breyers is totally worth it.
That couldn't have been more exaggerated. I'm not going to spend $350,000 on a strip steak when I can go to Ponderosa and get a buffet for $18.
Dude, they are literally like $8 or $9 sometimes at Jewel.
What are?
Breyers, I'm pretty sure.
For a pint of ice cream, $8 or $9.
It's a gallon.
It's not even a half gallon anymore.
I'm going to search.
They used to be half gallons. Now there's some weird off. We're almost a half gallon, but we're not quite a half gallon because we whipped so much air into our ice cream. Now I will say there, I've seen $5 pints of ice cream, but I've never seen $9 pints of ice cream, and I've definitely never seen $18 pints of ice cream. I think it's because you were in Manhattan last week.
It might have been because I was in Manhattan last week.
Crazy.
Everything's more there.
All right, so they're saying, they're backing this up. And just so you know, Fruit Loops were launched in 1963, the same year I was launched. So Fruit Loops and I came out together. I don't know what that has to do with the story, but I just saw it.
That is the out-of-context quote of the year.
That is a...
Fruit Loops and I came out together.
Fruit Loops and I, we debuted. It was our coming out party.
You certainly did.
Fruity and Loopy, that's
We're me. A week early on this story.
That's it's a whole month.
Oh, that's
anyway,
true.
So, millennials eat Fruit Loops and they eat it when they want to. And we are here to embrace that and tell them that that's great and that it's an awesome snack, said Kellogg's associate director who handles Fruit Loops. How'd you like that on your card? Hi, I'm the associate director who handles Fruit Loops. Oh, fantastic. I need to talk to the Frosted Flakes guy. Oh, she's not in. She's out. She and Tony the Tiger have had an illicit affair. It's all the talk of the hallways. It's very bad indeed. Frosted Flakes and Crave are also popular among people this age. Do you eat any of those cereals? Do you eat Crave?
What's
I don't
Crave?
Even know what Crave is.
Isn't Crave the one with the spaceman on it, the weird-looking...
That's Quisp.
Quisp, I'm sorry.
That's Quisp and his partner Quake.
Oh, wait, Crave. Isn't that the one where there's, like, chocolate inside of the nugget, so to speak?
Well, you can keep saying, isn't that the one, since we both said we don't know what Crave is.
I think that is the one. I've seen the commercials. They got the weird characters jump out of the box and go chomping after chocolate bits that try to run away.
Oh, you're right. There is a chocolate hazelnut Crave.
Yeah, see?
Crispy cereal with chocolate in there and hazelnut. I don't see any characters, though.
Well, in the commercials.
All right.
Yeah.
I liked Fruit Loops, but I was a Fruity Pebbles guy.
Really?
And Cocoa Pebbles.
I'm a Cocoa Pebbles guy.
Mm.
I had those Crispies, 3 days ago.
Cocoa Krispies. What are you, Jerry Seinfeld?
Yeah.
Is it because your granddaughters are over? Because those are not cereals usually associated with men in their, you know,
I understand
golden
that.
Years.
Ever since they came out with lactose-free milk, right. I have gone back to eating cereal in the morning.
The sugary cereals?
Yes.
The fun sugary cereals?
I know I shouldn't on my diet, but it's my one, gimme for the day.
So, all right,
I have Frosted
Cocoa
Flakes.
Pebbles, Frosted Flakes.
And the Fruit Loops.
And Fruit Loops.
Now,
admit, do you have any
Apple
Jacks?
I get the generic. I buy the generic. But no, I didn't like Apple Jacks.
I always liked
that. Didn't care for it.
What about Captain Crunch?
No, didn't like Captain Crunch either.
I used to eat Captain, before I made my transformation, I would eat Captain Crunch out of a Jethro Bodine-sized bowl every morning.
Wow.
I would eat so much Captain Crunch that I had no feeling on the top of my mouth. Oh, sure. I'd eat it dry. You know, doesn't matter.
You know, Roger, you could switch to Raisin Bran.
And I love that, too. And I should.
Probably should.
I probably should.
Razor Man's so good.
Yeah.
Cody, we're getting a lot of input. A half gallon of Blue Bunny ice cream on sale at Butera for $2.99. In case you're looking where you don't want to spend $28 on a pint of ice cream.
I knew I was going to get in trouble for that.
Breyers is $4.99 when it's not on sale.
I don't believe that. I don't know what Well, I mean, I'm in the city. Maybe that person's in the suburbs.
I don't know.
I don't know. Here's the thing. I love Breyers. I just feel like when I've gone to the store to buy ice cream, Breyers is a lot higher than I would think. It's like $6 or $7.
Well, it's a premium. It's a premium ice cream.
Yeah, and it's worth it, but I'm cheap. So I end up not buying ice cream.
Yeah?
And snack on bananas. Bananas are cheap.
That's probably better. Bananas probably better for you.
And healthier.
That's what I meant by better for you.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think
bananas.
I meant for you? they make a better weapon? No, I meant they were better for you. I meant they were healthier for you. How did that get lost in translation? Between the 12 feet between us, all of a sudden my word, it's healthier. Yeah, that's exactly what I meant.
This whole segment has thrown me for a Fruit Loop.
Boom. There we go. We do that. General Mills also trying to get in on the millennial action. Brands like Honey Nut Cheerios, Golden Grahams, Yellow Box Cheerios, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, and Lucky Charms all appeal to millennials.
Oh, I love Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Of course you do. God. There's not a cereal on this list that you probably don't enjoy.
Well, there's a few.
No, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I never had Lucky Charms. I know they're magically
Lucky
delicious.
Charms.
Lucky Charms.
Lucky Charms.
Why are they Lucky?
It's the Irish pronunciation.
I'm sorry, the what?
The Irish pronunciation.
Is that right? Are you gonna try to do that brogue when we get our guests in here?
Nope.
No, that's probably best. Because right now I think they might have left. Rory Makeham heard that and just went, I can't possibly go in that room. If he's going to allow that sort of drivel on the air. There's absolutely no way I'm going to expose myself. I have a career, I have a reputation, I have a lineage to protect, and I'm not going on somewhere where Lukey is considered an Irish brogue. Lukey Charms.
What language is that?
I don't know.
It's not even close to anything.
I'm offended on so many levels.
Yes.
That
are
there's
you?
Not, yes. I can't. I'm. This is how offended I am. Right now, though, we are going to turn our attention to all things Irish. Our good friends from the Irish American Heritage Center are here. That is because coming up on July 7th, 8th, and 9th, Irish Fest is back at the Irish American Heritage Center, which you know is at 4626 North Knox. So who do we have here? Mike Shevlin is here. He is co-chairman of the Fest. He is also the vice president of the Heritage Center. He is on the board of the Irish American Hall of Fame, and he's just an all-around wonderful guy. Good to have you here, Mike, and I don't say that just because you're sitting here. Happy Father's Day. We're glad to have you.
Great to be here.
Kathy O'Neill is here. She handles all the PR. You've heard Kathy with us for years and years, even when we were on when the sun never came up. Kathy O'Neill is here. She handles all the PR for the Heritage Center. Thank you, Kathy, for coming in. always good to see you.
Thanks for having me back, and happy Father's Day.
Thank you. You look like you're being held hostage. Are you all right? Is everything okay?
I'm recovering from the Irish American Hall of Fame.
That's over a week. That's old news. We got to move on. Now it's Irish Fest time. Listen, we can't rest on our laurels. And the wildly talented Rory Makeham is here. You know, from the Makeham brothers at Makeham in Spain, a solo artist in his own right. He's been on the show many times. It's always a pleasure to see you too, Rory. Happy Father's Day.
It is great to be back, Brian. And I second the happy Father's Day.
Thank you. See, now Rory doesn't sound like he's being held hostage. Rory's all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. He's all ready to go.
He's trying to recover from the fact that you were staring right at him when you mentioned legal trouble.
Well, listen, I know how it goes with musicians, artistic types. Always, you know, the rules don't really apply to us, Mike. You know, you're a corporate guy. You are very straightforward, a straight shooter.
Right.
Artists kind of, you know, a little goofy.
Enough said.
Let's go with that. So this is now the 32nd year for the fest.
That's right.
You've been watching over them for 72 years. How long have you been? You've been associated with the fest since you were with the center
kid,
rather,
yes,
since you were a little
that's
kid.
That's correct. Yeah, that my mom and dad were heavily involved. My dad was the first president at the Irish American Heritage Center. He was the chairman of the fest for many years, and then I came along. And most of my adult life, I've been involved with the center. Or with the festival, and since I was a child, in some way have been around the Irish American Heritage Center.
So we know it's gotten bigger. That's the easy answer. But how else have you seen it evolve? What big changes have happened over the years that you've?
Well, you know, we've made a big effort to bring in some of the best Irish entertainment in the world. And, you know, I think you can put our Irish festival up with any others here in the U.S., you know, and I think the musicians might agree, you know, that we have a very good lineup every year. And I think this year in particular, you know, we've done a lot to beef up our schedule and to be very welcoming to the Irish community here in Chicago.
How, because a lot of people probably aren't aware of this if they're not Irish or they don't follow Irish music. They might think, well, you know, how many Irish bands can there be?
Oh, there's a lot.
And it's all, and it's not all fiddle, banjo, you know, boron.
No, we try to break it up as much as possible. And this year we have three bands coming directly from Ireland.
Nice.
One of them is one of the premier bands in the Irish festival circuit touring the U.S. and around the world, a band called We Banjo 3.
Okay.
They're an Irish band. They're a bluegrass band. They played at the Grand Ole Opry, and they played at numerous you know, Irish festivals and bluegrass festivals around the world.
Very cool.
We have another band that we're bringing in that was at our festival last year. They're kind of like a alt-folk rock Irish band called Tupelo, and they killed it last year at the fest, so we welcomed them right back. And then this year we have a new band that we've not had before, and it's the son of, if anybody out there knows, of the Fury Brothers, or the Furies, mm-hmm. George Fury. His son is leading a band now that I would call it, you know, more of like a pop rock band, but they're all Irish guys, you know, from outside of Dublin, and the band's called The Young Folk. So we have three bands coming from Ireland, and then we have the best in the business that do this all year round, go from, you know, in the festival circuit, and of course Rory will be one of our big guys, as he is every year with Makeham Spain.
And this, Rory's working with Makeham in Spain, but you're also doing a couple sets by yourself, right?
I have one set on my own on the Saturday evening.
Very nice.
At some point in the evening. I haven't looked at the schedule yet.
You just had to cut the rest of the band loose? What happened?
Well, they're
not
coming in.
Is there some behind the music kind of thing?
They will be en route.
Okay.
And I am a local.
There you go. Very nice. Well, listen, you do great with the band, but you do great by yourself, too.
You know, he played last year in the Fifth Province Lounge, which is our indoor stage, mm-hmm. and it was rapt attention paid to Rory Makeham on the stage, and I think that was one of your earlier solo gigs, right?
It might have been, yeah, and but I learned from the best.
Due to popular demand, Rory's back as a solo artist.
Very nice.
So we couldn't have it any other way, right?
I learned a new song for this year, too.
You did?
A single new song.
Just one?
Well,
are you going to stretch it out for like 45 minutes? That kind of seems like an odd set.
I'll pepper it with some other stuff, too. But
all right. Sort of snappy rapport?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh,
very cool. We're looking forward to that. Is it a challenge for you? Do you like working solo?
I love it, yeah.
Yeah?
It's a lot more challenging. Yeah, it is. Everything's on you. When you have a band with you, you share the load. And we've been doing it a long, long time. And
You get comfortable with
we're,
that.
We're very
with that
comfortable support, with it, yeah. And it's a challenge going on your own again. So, and I hadn't done it for 20-some-odd years.
Oh, wow.
And it felt like the right time, so. Back at it.
And it's a welcoming crowd. As Mike said, you got, you know, huge response last year, but it's a very welcoming crowd. Even if it's your first time going solo up at the Heritage Center during Irish Fest, everybody's there having a good time. Yeah. And especially in the Fifth Province, people come in, they're kind of chilled out a little bit, and it's a nice intimate room for somebody to play.
I find that the songs and the style of music that I would be playing is very familiar even to the younger people.
Yeah.
It's something they grew up with, and their parents grew up with, and their grandparents grew up with. And my father was very popular in the crowds. Chicago was a big market for yeah. himself and the classies, and it's remained that way. It's yeah. become a very important tradition in Irish America, is the folk song balladeering. So.
Well, and you do a great job of it. Mike, when you're looking at the lineup for the festival, how difficult or easy is it to find that balance between bands or guys doing music like Roy's, more traditional, kind of acoustic, slower, with the bands who are going to be outside that may be a little bigger, a little more modern, for lack of a better term?
Well, I'm not going to say it's not challenging. Of course it is. You know, you have to work within a budget, and you have to juggle the calendars of all the artists. But we try very hard to create a balance so that there's somebody at the festival every day. You know, something there for everybody, and whether it's traditional Irish music, whether it's the Irish folk music that Rory provides, whether it's, you know, sometimes we have acts for maybe a younger crowd, you know, we actually have some rock and roll, and, you know, so we have all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Rory's
not there on that.
Right.
Yet, but,
rock and roll day.
But we try to do something for everybody, and it's, it's a puzzle piece. You know, you put all the puzzle pieces together, and by the end of it, you hope you have a great lineup. I think we do this year.
And as you mentioned, music outside on the big stage, and then inside in the Fifth Quarter, Fifth Province.
So we are doing something new this year where we have two stages outside. So we have a folk stage and our main stage outside. We'll have music in the Fifth Province Lounge, which is our inside, and then we'll have cultural programming throughout the building. So we're going to have music all throughout, and it's, you know, for all weekends. So like I said, you can find something for everybody.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hear a song from Rory, and then Kathy's going to tell us about some of the other things that are happening, because music, a huge part of Irish Fest, but there's a lot of other really cool things that go on at Irish Fest, too. Irish Fest, again, is July 7th, 8th, and 9th at the Irish American Heritage Center. If you go to irish-american.org, you can get your tickets, which, this is unbelievable, $10 in advance for a ticket to Irish Fest if you purchase them before, by the end of the day, July 5th. If not, oh my goodness, you're going to have to pay a whole $15 to get in the gates, which is not bad either. But why don't you get your tickets early? $10. Parking is free. Of course it is, but you can get right off. Is it the blue line that stops right there?
Yes.
The blue line. You get right off the blue line at Wilson?
Get off at Montrose, or you can get off at Jefferson Park.
And then you just wander over.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's
follow the noise.
And there's shuttles from a parking lot at Wilson and Lamont to the center ground. So that's...
Yeah, and I wanted to mention that kids 12 and under are free.
And it's free parking.
Free parking.
So we do have a parking lot that will be free. And so once that fills up, you're on your own. But you have to go to the lot and take a shuttle bus. But that lot changes over throughout the day. So
yeah. The lot right at the center.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot. It's a lot going on. All right, let's do this, and then we'll come back and we'll keep talking, because Irish Fest is coming up, one of my favorite weekends of the year. So we will talk more about it and hear some wonderful music on the other side. It's WGN. We are talking about Irish Fest, which, of course, is at the Irish American Heritage Center, July 7th, 8th, and 9th. Mike Shevlin is here. He's the co-chair of the fest and VP of the Irish American Heritage Center. Kathy O'Neill handles all the publicity and so many other tasks. She was also Bill Mullery's wrangler at the Hall of Fame. How was that? How was being a wrangler?
He was lovely.
He was lovely, wasn't he?
Very nice man. Came there with his family. Stayed all night.
Yeah.
Came down and watched some music.
They couldn't get rid of him.
No, it was last call. He was hanging around. All the Murray brothers and sisters just in there in the pub, just drinking.
Kind of
no,
like
weren't.
Brian.
They were having fun. Listen, I have to stay. People are clamoring for me to clean up. So I had to hang around and throw the mop. Everybody stayed. A lot of the families of the inductees, it was a wonderful night. Everybody stayed there.
We're not sure how we're going to top it next year.
Well, I'm sure you will. I'm sure you guys have already started. Because, well, let's throw in, we'll get back to Irish Fest, because Rory's like, hey, I came in to sing. I know. Relax, Rory. We're going to get to you. Rory Makeup is here. He is Saturday, of the fest. So Saturday the 8th at 6:30 p.m., Rory is doing a solo set at the fest in the Fifth Province Lounge. So that'll be a lot of fun. And when is the band's set? Make them in Spain. When
make
does that
in
happen?
Spain will be performing at 3 o'clock on the main stage outside on Sunday.
On Sunday. So you got to be there for 2 days.
2 days.
Come on Friday. We'll just hang out.
I'll probably just clean up the place during, overnight.
I think that's good.
You know that scene where Will Ferrell decorates, you know, gimbals?
Yes, Elf. You're like Elf. You're the Irish Elf.
I'm the Irish Elf.
Like the leprechaun.
That'll be great.
That'll be wonderful. Then you don't have to worry about finding parking on Sunday either.
No, no.
If you park on Saturday, you just stay there. I'm sure they'll let you go in and use the bathroom or something.
Well, there's plenty of rooms up there, I know.
There are.
And I'll probably just bring my sleeping bag.
Yeah.
Tuck in.
I hear there's a room where there's going to be weepy ballads. That's the word on the street. During the fest, there's a room with nothing but weepy ballads. Is that correct, Kathy? Am I off base on that?
It's true. We have a very beautiful tea room where people can get out of the heat and come and enjoy a proper cup of tea, some sandwiches and scones. And Mark Picars is an Irish tenor with a Polish last name.
Talent.
Yes. And he'll be singing lots of weepy ballads on Saturday at 2 o'clock.
Saturday at 2. If you feel like crying, right before, as you're getting ready to go see Rory later in the day, and you feel like, you know what, I got to get a cry out in the afternoon. Go have a cup of tea.
The Irish love to cry.
Sure we do.
It's a good cry.
Yeah.
Mine will be the painful kind.
Let's talk about the nominations for next year, since we talked quickly about the Irish-American Hall of Fame. When do nominations
open? Nominations will open. They open after the Irish Fest.
Okay.
Anyone can nominate from any walk of life and anywhere here in the world or in the country, whatever. And it just go to the website, www.iahof.org, and you can nominate. You provide, you know, your information and then maybe a short bio of why you think that person should be inducted. And, you know, we'll take a look at that. We have a screening committee and a voting body. Rory is part of this illustrious crew.
Oh, okay.
Kathy and I are not. But you know, it's a democratic process, but we want to make sure that everybody has their say on who they think should be in the next class.
And just to reiterate, because I've had to answer this question numerous times in the last couple of weeks, it's not just a Chicago-based thing.
Not
it's
at all.
It's nationwide. So if you know a wonderful Irish-American who you think is deserving, nominate them.
Absolutely.
They don't have to be from Chicago. They don't have to have any Chicago ties as long as they have Irish lineage.
Correct.
And can prove that, right? You have to be able to... I don't know. Who's going to lie about
well,
that?
Well, we have our ways. We have our detectives can figure that out.
Is it tough, Rory, since you were on the voting committee? I can only imagine, because the people who were inducted are phenomenal.
They are.
I'm guessing that even the people who just missed are phenomenal as well.
Every year, it's a fantastic group of people. And I have, there are a few that I've been pulling for.
Yeah.
And I still will. And I've got them up here. I'm not going to say their names.
Okay.
Your dad?
Well, my father was the first year, that's right.
Yeah. And well, he's in. You can't be inducted twice.
He's in.
Can you?
Well, Brian, we've
this
been...
is like Chicago politics. Can we be inducted
twice?
Yeah,
Brian, we've been getting your nominations from you for many years now.
I've been sending them in.
Just
even before the Hall of Fame opened, I was like, hey, listen, I've got Irish lineage. I'll get in one of these days. At some point, you're going to run out of qualified people, and then you got to put somebody in.
Sorry to say, Brian, we have a long way to go.
I know. Well, listen, you've put people in post-mortem. I don't mind if I go in when I'm dead. I just, at some point.
Not as fun.
I know it's not as fun, and I don't know how many of my relatives would show up to honor me. But either way, all right, listen, enough of that. Enough about me, because we all know how fabulous I am. But let's turn to Rory, because we know how fabulous he is, too, and we want to hear, before we go to news, everybody's clamoring for a song. So what would you like to do for us?
Well, I was driving in here today, and it's such a perfect summer day, and I had such a wonderful Father's Day with my family today.
Nice.
And I was thinking of my own father. And he wrote a song about summertime, so I thought I'd do it. It says everything I think about summer. And it's the summer festival season, and you're not going to find a better festival to go to than right here in the city of Chicago, the Irish American Heritage Center. I'm very proud to be a part of it, so come out and see us. There are blossoms on the hawthorn that scent the morning breeze, and the oak and the ash and the copper beech are covered down with leaves, and the road is bright in the morning light as it runs down from the door, and the lark is high in the golden sky, and I'm on my way once more. Summer roads all full of turns and bends, summer roads
roads that lead to all my friends. Summer roads by summer streams where I live all my winter dreams. And the good times always start on summer roads. There's music all around me on every bush and tree. And the cuckoo and the corncrake keep calling out to me. And the linnet song rings all day long to greet me as I go. And as I pass in the roadside grass, the magpie nods hello. Summer roads all full of turns and bends. Summer roads that lead to all my friends. Summer roads by summer streams where I love all my winter dreams. And the good times always start down summer roads. Quiet of the evening, I rosined up my bow. And then I started nice and easy with something sweet and slow. There's a faster beat in the village street, and the friends all start to sway. And the fiddle sings and the laughter rings, and we dance till the break of day. Summer roads all full of turns and bends. Summer roads that lead to all my friends. Summer roads by summer streams where I live all my winter dreams. And the good times always start on summer roads. There's a corner in my memory where all the good times stay. And in all my summer ramblings, there were good times every day. Around every bend I find a friend, a welcome and a smile. And pleasant hours in fields of flowers, a memory every mile. Summer roads all full of turns and bends. Summer roads that lead to all my friends. Summer roads by summer streams where I live all my winter dreams. And the times always start with summer roads. Summer roads all full of turns and bends. Summer roads that lead to all my friends. Summer roads by summer streams where I live all my winter dreams. And the times always start up summer roads.
Yeah. Rory Makeham. He will be at Irish Fest on Saturday, all by himself at 6:30 in the Fifth Province Lounge. And then on Sunday, he will be there with the band Makeham in Spain. We'll hear more from Rory on the other side. We'll hear more from Mike Shevlin and Kathy O'Neill as we talk about Irish Fest, which again is July 7th, 8th, and 9th at the Irish American Heritage Center. If you go to irish-american.org, you can get your tickets. $10 in advance. Kids under 12 are free. There's free parking. Man, you can't beat it for a weekend of fun. We'll talk more to everybody on the other side of the news. WGN. Rory, for people who may not know, because you've referenced your dad a couple times since we've been here today. So for the uninitiated, since you've referenced your dad, tell everybody who your dad was.
Well, my father was Tommy Makeham, and he's been dead now 10 years, but he, along with the Clancy brothers, pretty much brought Irish music out of the pubs, and they brought it to the concert stage and really hit it big here in America during what would have been the folk boom of the late 50s and early 60s. They came to America to be actors.
Okay.
My father was offered a slot at the Old Vic. And he figured there were too many good actors in England. He'd come to America.
There you go.
And he moved to our whole family, except for my granny, who stayed in Ireland. They all moved to a place called Dover, New Hampshire. It's because we come from the linen trade. All of my aunts and uncles were weavers and spinners. My grandfather was a scutcher. And the cotton trade in America was in New England at the time.
Yeah.
And so they all moved there. So Granny, my Aunt Molly and Aunt Catherine, and they were all weavers.
Yeah.
My father went to Dover, New Hampshire first to get his feet wet and to make a few bucks before he went down to New York.
Okay.
And he hurt his hand and he worked at a foundry. And he was in the room one day where a 2-ton press was coming out of the bath that it was in. And the chain snapped, and he went to grab it, and it crushed his hand.
Oh!
And there was an upstart doctor named Dr. Demopoulos, okay, who I grew up down the street from. But all of the other surgeons in the hospital wanted to amputate my father's hand. And this was in 1955.
Oh!
And the young doctor said, I think I can save that man's hand. And he did. He took tendons out of his ankle, and he put them in his wrist.
Oh, my God.
And so my father couldn't work in the foundry anymore. So he said, I think I'll go down to see what this St. Patrick's Day parade is all about in New York. And he went down to New York, and he met up with the Clancys. And at the time, Patty was running a theater called the Cherry Lane Theater. And after his shows, they would put on folk music concerts at night. And they asked my father to go down, come up on stage and sing. And he did two songs that night, and afterwards these two older men came over to him and were asking him all these questions, and they were asking about his mother, Sarah. And my father told him, was very gracious to them, and after they left, he went to Diane Hamilton and said, now who were those two men? She said, you don't know who that was. No, I don't. She said, that was Alan Lomax and Pete Seeger. And so my father went out the next day and bought a Weavers record and became the biggest fan. And Diane bought him a banjo about 3 weeks later, and
the rest is history.
They started making more money singing songs than
there
they did.
There you go. And so you and your brothers grew up around this music, and you got into music early. And then you had a band with your brothers, the Make 'em Brothers.
I did, yeah.
And then that kind of evolved into Make 'em in Spain.
We brought the Spains on about 16 years ago, just to fill out the sound. And
there you go.
Things have evolved since then, and we've just moved on. And now it's down to the three of us. And there's not a lot of people our age or younger singing these old ballads, although they're coming back.
Oh, well, and that's good to hear. Is there a difference between American folk music and Irish folk music, or is it all kind of the same sentiments, just a different point of view?
Well, I think it's normal, everyday working people who had to entertain themselves.
Yeah.
And it's been lost to the wayside because then we have so much entertainment coming at us. I was pumping gas the other day, and I was watching TV and listening to the lotto numbers.
Right.
But when groups of people, for the Irish, we would gather at the crossroads or at a pub, and stories and recitations and songs would all flow out of everybody. And they'd go home, they'd go to bed, get up at 5 in the morning the next day, go to work. My granny would get home from work in the mills, and she'd make the bread for the next day. They'd have dinner, and then they'd all meet down at the bottom of the street and sing songs and tell stories for hours until bedtime. And so that's the tradition I grew up in. It was just expected that if you're at a party, everybody has a song or something to recite. The way we had it.
Well, that's how I treat this. So you came, you have to have a song for us. I know you've done one, but we'd love to have another. What do you got for me?
Well, you know, I spoke of my granny, and she became quite famous, although she never played a gig.
Okay.
I think she sold more records than I have. But I'll leave that as it is. She was a man named Sean O'Boyle. He was starting a radio show for the BBC.
Okay.
And he traveled the length and breadth of Ireland, and he ended up at my granny's house. And he recorded her singing a bunch of songs, but he used one of her songs for the title of his radio show, and it became the longest-running show in all of the British Isles.
Wow.
Every Sunday morning, my granny's voice woke 7 million households in the British Isles for, I think, something like 46 years.
Wow.
So she said, had I known it was going out to that many people, I wouldn't open my mouth. But it was called, the radio program became As I Roved Out. It was a song my granny sang. And I'm not sure if I'm going to know all the words, but I thought I'd do it on the way in.
There you go.
As I roved out on the May morning, in the May morning right early, I met my love upon the way, oh Lord, but she was early. And she sang a loop doodle loop doodle loop doodle dee, she heightled on the dee, she heightled on the dee, and she landed. What age are you, me bonny wee lass? What age are you, me honey? Modestly she answered me, I'll be 17 next Sunday. And she sang a little doodle little doodle little doodle dee. She heightled on the dee, she heightled on the dee, and she landed. I went to the house on the top of the hill when the moon was shining clearly. She arose to let me in, a funny chance to hear me. And she sang a little doodle, little doodle, little doodle dee. She heightled on the dee, heightled on the dee, and she landed. She grabbed her by the hair of the head, and down to the room she brought her. With the butt of a hazel twig, she was the wealthy daughter. And she sang a little doodle, little doodle, little doodle dee. She heightled on the dee, she heightled on the dee, and she landed. Marry me now, my soldier lad, will you marry me now or never? Marry me now, my soldier lad, for you see I'm done forever. Oh, I can't marry you, me bonny wee lass, I can't marry you, me honey, for I have my own wife at home, and how could I disown her? And she sang a loop a doodle loop a doodle loop a doodle dee, she heightled on the dee, she heightled on the dee, and she landed. Sang a loop a doodle loop a doodle loop a doodle dee. She heightled on the dee, she heightled on the dee, and she landed.
So there you are.
Very nice. I think your granny would be proud. You did. You seem to remember all the words.
I might have forgot a couple of verses, but you got the gist of the story.
It sounded wonderful. That's Rory Makeham. He will be performing at the Irish Fest at 6:30 on Saturday night. That's July 8th. All by himself, a big solo set in the Fifth Province. And then on Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. with the band Makeham in Spain. So twofer. They got you. They got figure they got you. They might as well keep you for a second day.
Well, I'm very proud to be there. It's a fabulous festival run by the most gracious, wonderful people. And being part of it means a lot to me. Yeah. So.
It's a big deal. All right. We talked a lot about the music, which we'll get to a little bit more. But Kathy O'Neill is here as well. She handles all the PR for the center. There's a lot more going on. Now, I know last year Irish Fest was the scene of Cody and Mai's greatest public embarrassment when we were defeated in the kilt contest by an old man who was all dressed up and a cute little kid.
And a baby.
And a baby. I don't think there was a baby. Was there a baby? Did we get defeated by a baby as well? To your recollection?
I don't remember that part.
Yeah, we don't remember the baby.
And a kitten, I think.
I think there was a kitten. I'll give you that.
Never follow children or animals.
I know, right? You don't work with kids or animals. And we had to go up against too. But there's a lot going on besides the music. We mentioned the tea room where their weepy ballads will be sung by Mark Pekars along with others. What other things? Because while the music is the focus of the fest, there's a lot of other great things going on there.
Yeah, we like to think that it's kind of a showcase of what we do all year long at the Irish American Heritage Center. So you can see our music and dance schools come out for performances. We have dance lessons, music lessons, so there might be some chance for you to show your Beauron skills. I know you've been taking lessons.
I have been taking lessons. I wouldn't use the word skills, but I was trying to keep a beat during Rory's last song, so at least I knew what the tempo was. So I'm getting there.
We have a contest called Shamrock Stars, and that's where little kids can come out and sing weepy ballads. It's really cute to watch these little kids come out.
I want to see children who are already reveling in their Irish misery. That's what I want to see, like a five-year-old who's so dark.
But they're very serious about
it. Yeah, sure they are.
Yes. And it's nice because they've learned it from maybe their grandparents or the moms and dads. We also have our own kids area. So we'll have Irish Wolfhound dogs out there and people can come in and learn about this noble breed.
Yeah.
We also have a lot of food and drink. So we have vendors selling Irish food and American food. We have Guinness, you know. So.
I will say this. One of the comments that my friends and my relatives who were there last year, They loved the fest overall. So Mike, it was music, everything they loved. But they said to me, I like the fact that no matter where I turn my head, I can see a place to get a beer. You don't have to go far. You don't have to wait in long lines. You know your audience, and that's a beautiful thing.
One of the other things,
it is a proper festival,
and it's a proper pint that we pour. There is a science to it. One of the things we're doing again this year is a comedy showcase, and we might be hitting you up if we can't find anybody else. We'll just
see the respect I get, Cody. This is why I go back there so often, because I feel so welcomed there.
And I think
I just happen to have a tuxedo in my car.
Hold on. Let me get downstairs.
A tuxedo t-shirt.
Yes.
And I think Patty Vasquez might join us again this year.
Very nice.
She's very funny. She likes to come out to the fest every year. So it's just a really great weekend for families, for people in the community, for our neighbors, to see what we do all year long at the Irish American Heritage Center. It's a great way for us to spread our stuff.
And the library is going to be open. Are they going to be doing genealogy things during the fest?
Which genealogy. We tell people just bring whatever you can, some kind of document, because a lot of people get daunted. They really don't know where to start to trace their roots. And we're going to have some really great programming up on our second floor, weaving and quilting demonstrations. Mm-hmm. We'll also have some music demos up there as well and a couple of lectures. You can learn the Irish language, which should be hello and goodbye and a couple of curse words.
Perfect. That's really all you need. And most of the time, the Irish don't even use goodbye. We just kind of disappear at the end of the night. Am I right, Rory?
That's the way it's done.
The Irish goodbye. Oh, where'd he go?
Bill Murray did that last week at the
Yes,
Hall
he did.
He ghosted us.
He knows it well.
Well, we got ghosted by one of the astronauts, one of the Kelly brothers in their video. That's ghosted us.
Yes.
He just disappeared. It was like, hey, wait, the video, where'd he go? All right. The one thing I haven't mentioned is the hours. I've mentioned the location. I've mentioned the dates. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned the price. What are the hours for the fest?
We are there all weekend long. We open at 6 o'clock on Friday night, and we go till midnight, and then Saturday, noon to midnight, and then Sunday, noon until we kick you out at about 11 p.m.
This is also a good way, because I had somebody approach me and say, listen, I'm 100% Irish. I want to get involved at the center, what do I have to do? I said, well, it's easy. Just go to the website, irish-american.org, and you can find out everything that's going on. Volunteering at the fest would be a great way to kind of get your feet wet and see what's going on, and you get behind the scenes a little bit, you see how it's going. People still can volunteer, am I right?
Absolutely. You can visit our website and sign up. I think you're volunteering for us if no one else
yes.
is available.
No, we're coming. My wife and I are volunteering on Saturday morning. She volunteered on St. Patrick's Day and had a wonderful time.
She did. Some of our greatest volunteers got their start that way.
Yeah.
It's just a great way to come out and meet people and hang out and have a good time, maybe get a T-shirt.
Right.
But that's brought a lot of people back who are with us for 10 or 12 years now.
Yeah, and it's, well, the center year-round, as you mentioned, it's not just during Irish Fest, but year-round, and Mike, I'm sure you'd agree, it's a very welcoming place. So if you're just up there and you think, well, you can come into the Fifth Province, you can have dinner, you can have a beer,
right.
you can look at the website, find the hours, go up, just look around the library, it's there.
Well,
make use of it.
That's so true, Brian. There's so much going on at the Irish American Heritage Center throughout the year, and we look at the Irish Fest as our way to showcase all that we do,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully you could taste a little bit of everything and come back for other nights when it's available to you. So we have the Fifth Province Pub, which is open most days of the week now, and we have live music in there on Friday and Saturdays. We have a session, a great session on Thursday night in the pub. There's always an opportunity. We have lectures, we have concerts, we have book signings and readings, and again, dance lessons and music lessons and Irish language lessons. And so there's things for whatever you feel like doing. There's something to do if you want it. You don't have to be Irish, and you could just if you just have an interest.
Right.
We have one of the largest collection of Irish books in that library is at the house at the Irish American Heritage Center.
It's amazing.
You're not going to get it, at the City of Chicago Library System. You're going to get it at the Irish American Heritage Center, and so it's a great place to visit.
It's at 4626 North Knox Avenue, of course. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. Hopefully, we have time for one more from Rory Makeham, if he is amenable to that. But I figure he's still got his guitar out, so there's a good chance he's ready to sing for us again. We'll do that on the other side. It's WGN. Let's go through this again. The fest is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mike Shevlin, July 7th, 8th, and 9th.
That's
is correct.
Correct?
All right, that is good. Parking is free.
That's correct.
You are going to, once the lot at the Heritage Center fills up, there is a remote lot and there is a shuttle.
That's correct.
Pre-sale tickets, $10 through the end of the day, July 5th. Children 12 and under are free always.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Then such a deal.
Why not say it's $15 at the door, which is still a great deal for all you're getting. That's still a great deal, but why not save yourself that $5? Maybe get some food or a beverage or something from one of the fine vendors.
That's exactly the idea. Our thought is it doesn't really matter how you get in the door. We just want you there, and there's so much to offer at the Irish Fest. So we want people to be able to get in there, families to get in there, to be able to afford it, and spend their money and all the wares that we have to offer, the food that we have to offer. We're so proud of the lineup and all the programming that we have. Most of the acts that you'll see on stage, on the main stage, far more than $15 to get in to see them. So,
well, let's hit some of these headlines, the big headliners.
So Friday night we have a band called The Young Folk, direct from Ireland, and we also have Michael McDermott.
Michael McDermott,
Chicago,
big friend of the show.
Yeah, Chicago folk singer. And on Saturday we have the band Scythian. They're
I'm
out
glad
of Washington,
you said
D.C., and they're fantastic. If you want to talk about high energy, Scythian will deliver.
Right.
Yeah, sure. Ukrainian guys doing Irish music, but they do a little bluegrass. They do,
Is there a lot of Ukrainian music we're going to hear?
They do a little bit of that too. But
is that
my gosh, is it good? So
right.
A little bit of everything. And prior to them, of course, we have a band out of Dublin called Tupelo, and they're fantastic. And we have Runa, a traditional Irish band out of Pennsylvania.
Right.
And then on Sunday, the lineup is just stellar. I mean, we have Make 'em Spain, of course.
Right.
We have Wee Banjo 3, direct from Galway, and then perennial favorite Gaelic Storm.
Oh, all right, yeah, Gaelic Storm's always there.
So people will be camping out outside, so get there early.
Very nice. Well, it is a fantastic, fantastic event. You need to get up there, even if you're not Irish. You just want to have a good time. July 7th, 8th, and 9th, the Irish American Heritage Center, of course, is at 4626 North Knox Avenue. Right off the blue line, if you don't want to drive, irish-american.org is where you get all the information. You can buy your pre-sale tickets. You can get everything. And if you want to volunteer, if you've been thinking about getting involved at the center, or you just want to volunteer at a cool festival, this is the one to do it. All right, before we get out, out of here. Rory, first of all, thank you again for coming in. Thank you, Mike and Kathy, for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Happy Father's Day to Mike and Rory. We're gonna, we got time for one more. Can you get one more for us?
It just popped in my head, and it's for all the fathers out there. I appreciate what we do.
There you go.
My old man was not a mover or a shaker, just a dreamer. I'm a lot like him. And he used to talk a lot about the old days, brother, when the time was hard and the money was thin. He used to go fishing about once a year. He'd laugh himself silly on a couple of beers. Tell an old story to a willing ear. And then he'd turn right around and he'd tell it again. My old man, talking about my old man. He was there at the start with a willing heart. He was there when the world began. My old man, my sitting here thinking about my old man. My old man was a daddy till I got too cold to call him that anymore. And he took my mother to the Grange Hall dance and he'd waltz her across the floor. He took us to town on a Friday night. He used to chew tobacco when he'd get uptight, sitting and spitting in the fading light in the car in front of the grocery store. My old man, talking about my old man. He was there the start with a willing heart. He was there when the world began. My old man, my old man. I'm just sitting here thinking about my old man. My old man was a dragon in the pants man when he get home from the mill. With the chores and the weeds and the kids to feed, you know he never had a minute to kill. But he always had a twinkle in his old gray eye. I felt a lot better when he worked outside. Worked right up till the day he died. I bet the Lord's got him working still. My old man, talking about my old man. He was there at the start with a willing heart. He was there when the world began. My old man, my old man. I'm just sitting here thinking about my old man. I'm just sitting here thinking about my old man. I'm just sitting here thinking about my old man.
Rory Makeham, fantastic. It is always great to see you. I can't wait for people to get out to Irish Fest and listen to your whole set. It's always an honor to have you in. I enjoy it very much.
It's an honor to be on your show, Brian. Well, thanks for having me again.
It is a pleasure. Happy Father's Day. And Mike Shevlin, of course, happy Father's Day to you. Thanks for bringing Rory in.
Thank you.
We will all be out at the fest. Now, Kathy, I know, is still rubbing my nose in the fact that I lost last year. But now you won't have that to hold over my head anymore.
We'll think of something.
I'm sure you will. All right. We're going to be at the fest July 7th, 8th, and 9th. Irish-American.org is the website. Get your tickets in advance. Free parking. Kids 12 and under free. You can't beat it for a weekend of entertainment and the best music you are going to hear anywhere. All right. Let's do this. On the other side of the news, Karen Conti will be here. She'll be answering your legal questions, so start getting them in now. 312-981-7200. That's how we keep you out of trouble on WGN. Oh, you don't want to do hard time. Sunday night after the 8 o'clock news, you know what that means. Karen Conti comes in, and she joins us to answer your legal questions at 312-981-7200. I know you don't want to go to jail. I know you don't want to have to pay more than you have to on whatever. So get your questions into Karen and get the answers. Hello, welcome back. You were north of the border, up with Mounties and Maple Leafs and Canucks. Did you have fun?
And poutine.
You didn't eat poutine.
I tried it.
Did you really?
Poutine is disgusting, I think. I mean, you take French fries, right?
Right.
And you take squeaky cheese, which is like cheese curds, and then you throw gravy on it. And all of those things are perfectly fine by themselves, but together, it does not make sense to me.
See, and that seems like the exact opposite of anything I would picture you eating.
Well, I had to try it.
Right. Did you cause an international incident when you threw it on the floor and said, this is disgusting?
I had one bite, and I said, it's exactly what I thought it was.
Wow. And then, is something wrong with your poutine, ma'am? And did you have to make up some excuse, or did you pretend you were ill and just flee from the restaurant? Or did Jerry eat it?
I said I'm a small eater.
I see Jerry just shoveling it in. Oh, poutine. So did Jerry like the poutine?
Yeah, he did too, but we didn't.
It just
didn't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, French, how about some, just give me straight up French fries. If I'm going to go bad, that's what I'm eating.
Well, and somewhere on the East Coast, gravy fries are a big thing. I think it's Jersey where gravy fries are a big thing.
And in Central Illinois and Southern Illinois, they have the horseshoe of course, which is very similar. I think there's a few extra added heart clogging ingredients.
Yeah, there's meat and bread in a horseshoe.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the cheese is more of a sauce, like a cheddar-y sauce. But it's you're right.
It's similar,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's very similar.
Yeah.
All right. There's a lot of very interesting legal stories to get to
yes.
this week. A lot. So let's start with this one, because I remember hearing of this case when it first came out. The girl who she was, now she's 20. She was convicted of involuntary manslaughter because the prosecution said she urged her, maybe it was a boyfriend, maybe it wasn't, she urged a guy to go through with suicide who was a couple years younger than her. So what? Give us the background of that case and what involuntary manslaughter is.
Well, you know, it was interesting. First of all, most states have a law that says that if you encourage or you cause someone to commit suicide, that could be a crime.
Okay.
Massachusetts, where this case was tried, does not have such a crime. So she was tried under involuntary manslaughter, which is a reckless action, paraphrasing, that would approximately cause or be one of the causes of someone to die.
Okay.
So usually involuntary manslaughter, someone's waving a gun around and accidentally, you know, kills somebody. Or if you're driving down the road and you're putting your lipstick on and you run someone over, that's typical involuntary manslaughter. Very rare do you see a prosecution when words alone make
yeah.
someone kill themselves. Now, this is a case, though, if you followed it at all and if you Google it, she really kept on him. You know,
yes.
get back in the car. This is your time to die. I mean, she just went after him, knowing that he had trouble, knowing he was getting ready to do it. And at the end of it, she calls up her friends and says, oh, boy, you know, I really caused this guy to die, words to that effect. So, you know, you had about as clear a case as you could under mm-hmm. those facts. You know, morally and ethically, you just shudder. You know,
yes.
just, what
yeah.
was this girl thinking about? Like, how morally bankrupt do you have to be to do something like this?
I remember when the story first came out, I couldn't believe that someone could be that uncaring about another human being.
I mean,
being.
Did she think it was funny? I guess I don't know. But it is a slippery slope. When is your First Amendment right to say things, no matter how offensive, cross over the line to cause somebody to take their own life? And clearly he had mental illness before. Clearly he was predisposed to suicide. But did she push him over the edge? It seemed like she did. So, you know, she's going to do some time. She's a juvenile. She was charged as an adult. And I would guess and bet that Massachusetts now will enact a specific law, like we have in
right.
Illinois, that says if you do this sort of thing, it's a crime in and of itself.
Well, the judge said that her conduct, quote, her wanton and reckless conduct, end quote, had resulted in this guy's death. So that's what the prosecution was saying, and the judge agreed. The judge said, yes, her conduct did cause the death of this guy.
Yes, and it doesn't have to be the only cause. It has to be one of the contributing causes.
Right.
So clearly, like I said, people who are predisposed to commit suicide probably have other issues that are causing this, but she, you know, and it was all
documented. Yeah.
It was all documented. There was no he said, she said. You really didn't even have to have her testify because
right.
it was right on the text.
When you say it's a slippery slope, this wasn't just kind of ignoring something or not call if you know somebody's in trouble, not stepping in. She was actually pushing for this. Would it be the same as if I, you know, I want to shoot myself and I just like left the gun right in front of
me? No, I think that clearly wouldn't be involuntary manslaughter. But again, when you have a case like this, you worry about what's the next
right.
step. And here's a situation that I would be concerned about. Let's just say that your husband has terminal brain cancer and he's in huge amounts of pain and you're talking to him and he wants to kill himself and you say, well, you know, honey, that might be, you know, bye and goodbye and I love you and yeah, I want you to have peace.
Mm-hmm.
What did I just make him do that? Did I allow him to do that? Is that something that's actionable? So
but that,
again,
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's so different than what she did, though.
But it's the same thing. You still can't kill yourself. It's still wrong
right.
to tell someone to kill themselves, even if they have a good reason,
right?
You know, which is maybe they're in pain. But this kid was in pain, too,
mm-hmm.
in a different way,
right,
mentally.
Right, right.
All I'm saying is it'll be interesting to see if these kinds of cases get brought more often. I mean, clearly we have, in this day and age of all this cyberbullying, cyberstalking, and you know, these people holding, you know, dirty pictures of other women,
right.
you know, for ransom. I mean, all of these things are very powerful and make people do horrible things. And our laws are probably going to change in conjunction with how powerful these kinds yeah. of activities can be.
Well, and this is not the first case that where a suicide was the action that brought a case. There have been others around the country,
yes.
But as you said, it's the laws of that state depending on, you know.
Right. It was the way this was charged that I think was very different because there wasn't a specific law.
All right. Let's move on to something else real quick before we, all right. The Cosby thing, we're going to wait till after the break. Let's do the president very quickly because we've talked about obstruction of justice and how hard it is to prove. And now there's reports that, that the independent, counsel, Robert Mueller, is opening an investigation into the president for possible obstruction of justice. Where can this go? I mean, is it going to be hard to, what obstruction, as you said, very hard to charge anyway, because it's hard to prove, but even harder, I'm guessing, if it's the president of the United States.
Well, yeah, and we can't prosecute a sitting president. So, you know, this investigation is going to broaden, and I think it has broadened. I think, obviously, it's going to be as to whether he fired the FBI director because he was trying to cover something up. Mm-hmm. But I think we're now going to expand into, you know, what was he trying to cover up? What did he know? What did his son know or his son-in-law know? And we don't know exactly what
right.
those things are right now. We have no idea, and there's a lot of speculation. There was a business deal that Trump did a long time ago where he bought a $40 million mansion and then sold it to some people in Russia who for $100 million with no renovations. So what's is that money laundering? I mean, all of these things, again, completely speculative. They have nothing in fact that I know about. But I would imagine that there might be some things that are going to be investigated. And again, if they say that there was obstruction of justice, that might just be enough for the party to say, you know what, we're going to impeach you. Because that's where we're heading.
Right.
If we're heading down that road, that's where we're going.
In general, and I know we have to make this about the president because that's the case we're talking about. But if you're an attorney and your client is constantly making statements via Twitter or however they're making statements that are contradicting what you as their legal counsel is saying, how do you approach a client like that? And I don't know if you've ever had somebody who's doing things that are they're not taking your advice, which basically seems to be what the president seems to be doing with his own legal team, not listening to them.
Well, you know, in my view, Trump's own words have gotten him into huge trouble, even the travel ban. And I've said this before. He was showing, by his words, he was showing the intent was to ban Muslims from the country, right. Or at least that was one of his intents. So, you know, when you have a client who thinks he's really smart and he's very headstrong and he doesn't have any self-control, and listen, Trump is a businessman who's never really worked for another company before. Mm-hmm. He's never listened to anyone. He's never had a boss.
He's always been the boss.
He's always done exactly what he wants to do, and even when his lawyers tell him not to, he says, well, let him sue me, and that's how he walks through his life. This is different, you know. I mean, they're being president, you know, highly regulated government activities. There are protocols, and I think that, you know, I don't think he's controllable, Brian. I really don't. And I think as a lawyer, you get very frustrated. You try to do damage control. You try not to get involved in any fraud yourself because, listen, you don't want to be part and parcel of encouraging him to do something wrong.
Right.
And who knows? Might he turn around and blame me for giving him that advice?
Sure.
I mean, that is a very concerning thing when you're a lawyer, that you have a client who might just turn around and point his finger at you.
So he's making his own legal team's job much harder.
Very, very much so. Right. And again, do you want to upset the judiciary when you're in the middle of all this stuff? You know, he's saying horrible things about the investigator. He's saying things about, you know, Comey was a nut job. The judges are crooked. You know, you just don't do that when those people have your fate, you know, sort of in their hands.
There's a question. This is a good question. From this 269, Trump's attorney said that the president isn't under investigation because he hasn't been notified. Who gets a heads up when somebody's being investigated? Do they have to? Does the Justice Department or Robert Mueller have to tell you you're being investigated?
No.
So nobody has
not.
To. Nobody has to.
The government does a lot of investigations completely covertly.
Okay.
You know, sometimes they'll say we're targeting you and we want some information.
Okay.
So, but it's.
But they don't have
they
to.
They don't have to, and you know, and I think that. You know, I think that was interesting that the lawyer took that position. Hey, he didn't tell me that I'm not sure that that's the case. Whereas Trump is saying, yes, I am under investigation. Yeah. So, again, it doesn't look good. That's even from a political standpoint
right.
alone. That just makes them look like they don't know what they're doing.
Right. Somebody's got you got to be talking to each other.
Yeah.
Right? All right. Let's take a quick break. Some calls coming in. Some texts. 312-981-7200. Karen Conti is here to answer your legal questions. And then we have to get into the big mistrial in the Cosby case. A lot to talk about. We'll get to you on the other side. It's WGN. Let's get started. George is in Chicago. He's been hanging on. Hi, George. Welcome to WGN.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
We're well. What's your question, George?
So I have these neighbors that I'm pretty sure dug their way out of the fiery pits beneath us and squatted next to my house.
All right.
They started to build a berm, a dirt berm, and a shed that I'm pretty sure was over our you know, the property boundary. And I'm wondering, I've already called the city. The surveyor has come out. They're 15 feet over the line. They've given us the finger, and they got cited by the city. They have not paid that. What other legal action can I take?
So they are definitely on your property.
15 feet over.
That's
our property.
That's a lot. We're not talking inches here. We're talking a lot. Well, you can utilize self-help. You know, you can remove the berm up to your line. The problem with doing that is, you know, you've got neighbors who you have to live next to. This is a real problem that I've seen over and over, George, where, you know, you want to do what's right, or what you're entitled to do, but this could, you know, get violent, you know, and you certainly don't want retaliation for the next 20 years or however long you live there. Maybe what you do is you say you get this off and you've got 5 days to do it, or otherwise I'm going to hire someone to come out and remove it. Does that solve the problem if they take off the berm that goes over your line?
They've actually poured a bit of concrete and put a shed there for their lawnmower too. So,
you're going to have to pay some money to take care of this.
Oh, I will pay as much as possible to get rid of it. I don't care. I will deplete my savings
George is on a mission.
I'm that far beyond words. It is. I'll take an extra shift. I don't mind.
Do you know why they did it? I mean, I'm just curious. Why would someone intentionally?
All right. So here's what happened. When they moved in, and our backyard gets a lot of flooding. There's three backyards that meet up at a single corner, kind of like how Colorado and the others. You know how they meet up at a square like that. All right.
Okay.
So that water collects right there. So what they did was they built the berm. They didn't bother the yard that's next to me, but, you know, since I'm the middle of the L, of like an L of two homes. So what they did was they built 15 feet over into my property and then butted up against my neighbor's property, so they don't want the water to basically collect in their yard. So now this huge berm of dirt blows the water into my backyard and my neighbor Don's backyard. And they are dry, and now they put a shed there, and it's like, you know, I don't even know what to say anymore about it. It's so ridiculous. We're going on for a year and a half now.
George, just so to make my answer complete, you know, there's always legal action, okay? And the lawsuit would be for trespass. The law, you might even get an injunction to enjoin them and require them to take down what they put up. Infringes on your property. But again, you know, that's expensive stuff. And once there's an order, though, if the judge orders that it be taken down, the judge will give these people a certain number of days to do it. And if they don't do it, they can be held in contempt and they can be incarcerated, potentially.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's going to happen. But then you're going to be talking about tens of thousands of dollars later down the line. And so, but again, that is a possibility.
I told them, this was the last time I talked to them, I gave them the option. I said, I will pay out of my pocket to dig up the concrete, I will relocate your shed, I will make any repairs to the shed, and I will move the berm, and I will pay for that all myself as long as it gets moved onto your property. So they literally don't have to pay anything, and then the door slammed in my face and then an egg on my window the next morning. So I don't know what to say.
I'm sorry to hear that. And some towns, I'm not sure where exactly you are, but, you know, some towns will have actual neighborhood mediators who will mediate some of these issues. But if you got crazy next to you, you know, mostly crazy people like this will not go to mediation. And it's not, you know, they're not even going to come to the table.
No. And they're not going anywhere.
No. Well, good luck, George.
Good luck, George. Sorry, man.
I hate those stories.
And we get those all the time.
Yeah.
Because people don't. They figure, hey, it's my house, it's my little world, I don't care what's going on next door or behind me across the alley, and they do whatever they want.
I think some people really kind of, like, enjoy doing that, you know? Maybe there was a bad word or some thought that someone's got something, and, you know, and then, oh, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to infringe on his property. Like, ooh, that's getting, you know, it's like some people really enjoy that.
Yeah, it's crazy. Now, somebody had texted and said they had, let's see, we got a couple minutes. Mary has an estate planning or a executor question. Hello, Mary.
Hello.
So what's your question for Karen? We only got a couple minutes before the news.
No, I'll be quick. I have an estate open regarding my father's death. It's been open for close to 4 years now. My brother is the executor, and he is not moving things forward in any sort of progressive fashion, and I've been really frustrated with that. What, if any, is my recourse?
This is a hard one. I get this all the time, Mary. It's very difficult because what you end up having to do is hire a lawyer to take some court action to move it forward. 4 years is a long time. I don't know how complicated the estate is, but that is a very long time. And I see this all the time where the executor's not selling things, not gathering the paying off the debts, not moving things forward. And in the meantime, everyone's life is on hold because I'm sure that there's assets and things that are going to be distributed. You know, you can give me best way to reach me is email me, and I have a couple lawyers who I work with who are estate planning lawyers. You're going to have to assess whether he's doing is really actionable and whether you want to pay the money to move it forward with a lawyer's involvement. So if you email me, I'm happy to refer you those people who can give you some specific advice.
What's that email again?
It's kconti, @kcontilaw.com. And just a word to everybody, when you are making out your wills and your estate planning, make sure your executor is a really good, efficient person who knows about money and handling things and is very responsible, because if you don't have somebody like that, it's a problem.
Yeah, good luck, Mary.
Yeah, good luck.
So drop Karen an email. That's always the best way. We give your phone number, and you can give your phone number right now.
Sure, 312-332-7800.
But an email is always best.
Yeah, because you can put the facts and you can tell me where you are, what county you are. You know, give me a few more details.
And that's always good. You need to know that. If they're not in Cook County, you need to know, because things change from county to county.
And I've got different lawyers who practice in different counties, and how much is involved and when things happen, because sometimes people send me a long email and then it's like 20 years ago. It's, there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah, so some quick bullet points right up front, bang, 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 and move along. Somebody texting it, George should have a fence put up on his property line, keep everything, and then have them arrested for trespassing.
Yeah, I mean, that is possible.
Can you do that?
Well, I don't think the police...
That's extreme, but...
Yeah, the police aren't going to arrest... I mean, if you're walking on someone's property repeatedly, but if you have something on their property, the police are going to say that's a civil matter. They're not going to arrest anyone for that.
All right. Trying to deal with that kind of thing. All right, more with Karen on the other side of the news. If you have a legal question, 312-981-7200. We'll get to the news right after this, WGN. Karen Conti is here on WGN, as she is every Sunday, unless she's out of town or has something better to do. But most Sundays, I would say the majority of Sundays, she's here with us from 8 to 9 answering your legal questions.
By the way, happy Father's Day.
Yes, happy Father's Day to all the dads.
Yeah.
It's a nice day.
It is.
It's hard because your dad's gone too. And I was saying earlier, it's tough when your dad's not around.
It's a different kind of day. You know, for all the people out there who do have dads who are among the living, you know, take advantage of it while it's there, because you really miss it. You can't get any of it back. Can't back the memories. You can't bring back, you know, all of those things. It's
even the awkward phone calls on Father's Day.
Yeah.
Where your dad was like, oh, all right, here's your mother. You know, even those you can't get back, and you wish you could. All right. Now, let's get to Bill Cosby.
Okay.
We know there was a mistrial. All right. How does this happen? It seemed like, and we've talked about it as it was coming up to this. First of all, are you surprised that there was a mistrial?
Actually, no, not really. And again, because we weren't able to watch it, it's really hard to, you know, I hear all these legal experts talking about it, but it really is hard to talk about it when you weren't sitting there, right?
Right.
But, you know, she had a lot of inconsistencies. She waited a while to complain. When she told the police initially what happened, there were multiple things that she said that were just not true, whether she forgot them or she was intentionally lying, I don't know. And then you have all the time that's gone by, the 13, 14 years that have gone by. And so even if the jurors knew about all these other cases, if they had read about it in the newspaper or whatever, they still are deciding this case based on the facts at hand. And it's hard when you have the person who is in the spotlight is the victim here.
Mm-hmm.
And if she's not credible, beyond a reasonable doubt is a very, very stringent standard.
And so, that's the standard. It's beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, how important, if you're the prosecutor and they say they're going to refile, does the court usually release a jury count for a mistrial, when they're deadlocked? Is it, because if you're going to re-prosecute, isn't it better if it's 11 to 1?
Oh, absolutely.
Or if it's 6 to 6?
You know, the prosecution has been criticized by a lot of lawyers because they immediately, without talking to the victim, without finding out what the jurors said, immediately said we're going to retry him.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, they have to do justice, and just so you know, my thoughts are that he's guilty,
okay?
But still, this is a tough case to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, and I think the prosecution should look hard at what really happened. Now, when they don't really release, the court doesn't release the counts, but these jurors will be talking if they want to. They may talk, they may not talk. They are certainly entitled to do what they want. My guess is that someone's going to talk. We're going to know what happened. Were there two jurors who refused to convict, or what happened here? And I would, as a prosecutor, I want to know that first before I decide to prosecute.
Yeah, because if it's just one person, then you're going to say, all right, well, there's one juror.
Exactly.
We could sway one juror.
Or maybe it was the other way around, where it was a holdout for a conviction and everyone else said not guilty.
Exactly.
And you also want to talk to the victim. Again, you know, maybe they talked to her beforehand, but not every victim wants to go through this again. You know, you take time off work. It's very stressful, and you're in the spotlight when you maybe don't want to be. And so, again, those are things that I thought the prosecution would have done before making that decision. I am going to be very interested to hear what the jurors say here. It's going to be the most crucial thing in retrying the case, too, because now we know what were the mistakes we made.
Right.
You know, how close did Cosby come to actually being convicted? The defense really is in a better position here. Usually a retrial benefits the prosecution. But here, because Cosby didn't testify, there's not another layer of testimony to impeach. So what I'm saying is this. The victim gave statements to the police.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gave more statements to the police. Then there was a deposition. Then she testified at trial. All of those statements, however different they are, can be used against her.
Yeah.
Because on any given day, when you say something slightly different, lawyers can make much of that. So now they have one more bit of testimony that they're going to pit against the other things she said. Whereas Cosby didn't say anything. So his testimony is frozen in time as to that deposition where he said, yes, I gave women drugs, and yes, I had sexual intercourse with her or sexual contact with her. So I think that the prosecution is going to be, you know, not in a great position here.
There was a lot made that the judge didn't let a dozen other accusers testify. Why would a judge do that?
It's really an interesting part of the law, Brian. Basically, the law says that we don't want to distract a jury with the bad acts of a defendant, okay? If a defendant did all these bad things in his past, that really doesn't have any bearing on what he did today. So, you know, you might say, oh, he was convicted of insurance fraud, he drove drunk. All of those are irrelevant. The issue that gets really narrow is, what if he did the same thing over and over?
Yes.
And does that show a pattern in practice? Does that show an M.O.? In my view, yes.
Yeah.
But this judge found, for some reason, that these situations were all different in some way, but there was that one woman who had a very similar situation happen to her with Cosby, and for that reason, the judge allowed her to testify, but only one.
What'd you think of the defense? It took only a couple minutes. One witness, couple minutes, the defense rests. I mean, it worked. They got a hung jury.
You know, sometimes when you put on evidence, the jury will focus on your evidence. And you kind of don't want them to do that in this kind of case, because this case was all about the victim.
Right.
Was she credible? Because she's the only one who's talking about mm-hmm. it. Cosby talked about it, and he was done years ago.
Right.
So if you focus on her in your closing and your opening, that's what really makes the jurors think reasonable doubt. Focus them on her inconsistencies. And from what I understand, he did a very good job of that.
Okay. It's rough because I think a lot of people think like you do. I'm one of them. He did it, you know?
Yeah.
And so this is different. He was not acquitted.
No.
So people who are saying, oh, look, he's been vindicated. He's innocent.
Hardly.
Da, 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 da. No, he just.
Hardly. He got lucky. But,
yeah.
And I guess I want to say one thing, too. I think jurors do a good job. I think jurors can really, when you're tasked with someone's fate, and in this case, this is a life sentence.
Right.
He goes to jail. He's not coming out.
Right.
But they really, I think, even if they knew about all those other women, which I'm sure at least one of them did,
mm-hmm.
right, that conversation probably circulated among the jury room. They focused on the facts at hand, and they focused on what happened here. And to that extent, I think they probably did a very good job. Look at, they were in there for 6 days. That's a lot of time.
That is a lot of time. Can a celebrity get the same? If Joe Schmo was facing this same charge, do you think the outcome is the same as it Bill Cosby, you know, America's dad, superstar for decades, is sitting across from you? Because let's be honest, as great a job as jurors do, jurors are human beings. And all of a sudden there's this superstar sitting there. Can that sway a jury?
It can. Sure it can. And I also think it played into it this way, Brian. I think that people were thinking maybe, why did she, you know, he made a pass at her before.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you go back and ask for more favors? Why did you keep calling him? Why were you trying to get a favor? What, you know, not to say that justifies being raped.
Right, yes.
But I think there's a thought of, why would this man do it? Why would he have to do it? He was important and powerful. He didn't have to do it with someone who was unwilling. There's that part of it, I mm-hmm. think, that's more than just celebrity. Because, frankly, by the time he got to trial, if anyone was reading the newspapers, you had to know that he was pretty dirtied up by that time.
Yeah.
I think the blush was off the rose on his reputation.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it'll be interesting to see the second go around.
It's got to be hard as an attorney when you have a client like this woman or any similar situation where there are those questions, you know, okay, and it's because there's that line of victim blaming. You don't want to blame the victim, but at some point it's got to be tough to try to answer those questions. Well, if he did this to you before, why would you go back? And why would you, you know, if a guy grabs you off the street and assaults you, there's no question. You were, you know, you...
Brian, I've tried cases for sexual harassment, and I've had jurors come back and say, she wasn't pretty enough. I didn't believe it. I mean, really, people don't understand rape. People don't understand harassment and discrimination because it's not about, you know, yes, he could have had anyone he wanted. Yes, he could have paid for it. Yes, he could have. I'm sure there were women out there who would walk into his hotel room and probably did whatever he wanted.
Right.
But that's not what he wanted.
Yeah.
You know, if all this is true, he wanted to drug someone and have them be comatose while he did what he did. This is a very strange behavior that no one can understand, and so therefore they can't put it in a shelf and say, oh, that's that kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
People just shake their heads and go, none of this is making any sense.
Yeah. And then they don't understand why victims sometimes put themselves in that situation. They empathize, they don't think it's right that people are victimized, but common sense goes, if you burned your hand on the stove once, why would you put your hand back on the stove? So it's a hard thing.
Right.
But this was shocking. I'm surprised. It's good, like you said, it's going to be very interesting to see what the jury actually says. And that's up to, let's go back to that. That's up to the jury to decide if they're going to tell what the count was, or can the court release what the count was.
No, the court's not going to release
They're not going to do anything.
There's rules in different courts about, like in federal court in Chicago, the lawyers can't just go talk to the jurors. The jurors have to make their own decision. There's no mandatory. So I'm sure there's going to be somebody who talks, if not all of them.
Yeah.
And And I'm sure early next week we're going to hear the stories from all of them. And let me also guess that there's going to be people who didn't like each other on that jury.
Oh, yeah.
Because for 6 days, when you're fighting, you know, 8-10 hours a day, that becomes very stressful. And I would guess that there's going to be a dividing line among the jurors, and we're going to hear some of the controversies that went on.
Do we know, and I might have missed this, were they sequestered for the 6 days?
They were sequestered, yes.
And is it like we see on TV or in the movies where they keep you at this hotel and you don't have access to TV and you're just kind of in a box and they feed you as a group and they move you as a group and everything is
Yeah, it is. It doesn't happen very often. Sequestering does not happen very often. But and it may not be, they may have had access to their computers and all that. But what I do know about sequestered jurors is they really call their own shots. If they want to meet in the morning at 8, they do it. No one tells them how to deliberate. No one tells them anything like that. They can stop and start and take breaks, go till late at night. Most of them do go to late at night because they want
to
get out.
Yeah,
they don't. In fact, it was just an interesting case in Chicago where a judge said, hey, listen, if you guys don't come up with a verdict now, I'm going to have you here over Mother's Day. And within, like, literally, like, minutes, I guess, or, you know, an hour.
Would that be cause for appeal,
well,
though?
The appellate court said no. But there was,
really?
that was a significant issue because when you threaten people with sequestration,
yeah.
Most people don't want. They want to go to their kids and their homes and their families and their jobs, and so. But it becomes an appellate issue. Certainly.
Yeah, I would think that would be the first red flag that pops up. Hey, the judge forced them into this.
Right.
Into this verdict.
One more comment. I kept hearing, why wasn't the judge answering the jurors' questions? Remember all those questions?
Yes.
They had like 12 questions.
Right.
And one of the reasons that a judge doesn't, what is reasonable doubt, judge? We don't know what that is. The judge cannot define it because the jury instructions that are given are tried and true. They've been used over the years, and that is what our legislators and our lawyers and our judges think are really important to give to a judge. But you can't define reasonable doubt because what reasonable doubt means to you might mean something different to me. And
right.
If the judge interjects his position, then that could influence the verdict in a bad way. So the judge really had his hands tied in not answering a lot of those questions.
Okay. Fascinating. Karen Conti is here, 312-981-7200. I know people will wait, and people will cry, as they do every week. Why did she go home? Well, because it's 9 o'clock, and that's what we do. We go home. How do they get a hold of you during the week?
You can call me at 312-332-7800, or better yet, email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
All right. We got a few more minutes with Karen, so get your calls in right now, 312-981-7200. Calls, text, legal questions. We'll answer them next, WGN.
Hey.
Few more minutes with Karen, then you can hear her Wednesday morning. Is Wednesday or Thursday?
What Wednesday
day?
Morning.
Wednesday morning at 6:40 with Steve Cochran talking about the big legal stories. All right, let's get to the phones real up. No? Yes? No. Cody's almost there. While we're waiting for that, it's Father's Day, and we always hear a lot about father's rights. But we've talked about this kind of, there's no real father's rights. It's parental rights.
That's
correct?
Exactly right. Father's rights, that phrase is a marketing ploy because, you know, both parents have exactly the same rights. Mm-hmm. And there's a new child support law that just is coming into effect on July 1st. It basically, you know, it changes the rules. It basically looks at the income of both parties. And certainly when it comes to custody and parenting time, we're facing a lot of cases where there's 50-50 parenting time. You know, whether that's good for children or not, the jury's out on that one because, you know, traditionally you have one person who's the parent, the residential parent, and then you have the other parent coming in visiting every other weekend, a couple times a week, maybe for dinner. But, you know, now we're having Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, mom, Thursday, Friday, dad, rotating the next week. So, again, those things kind of present problems in my view because kids don't always know, am I going to be home on this Monday and do I have to bring my sports stuff? And
right.
It's confusing.
Who's picking me up from school today?
It's confusing. It's good for parents, but, you know, we always have to look at what's good for kids, too. And, again, you know, the child psychologist will tell you kids are very resilient. They can adjust.
Well, sure. But how much do you want them to have to adjust?
Yeah.
That's the question.
No, it is. It's hard to see those kids that have to just plan ahead. You know, they have to plan ahead with all their books and their sports activities and their musical instruments. And mom
and
has to run
over.
Sleep
in a different room a couple nights a week.
And different rules. I mean, parents, when they're cohesive and they're together, usually they take different roles. Mom may be the disciplinarian. Dad may tuck the kids in. You know, mom may drive. You know, dad may make the meals. Whatever it is, it all works out.
Mm-hmm.
right? Because you're compromising in a marriage and you're taking on the rules.
A team,
but
right
when
there.
You have two separate teams in two separate households with two separate ideas of how to parent, that is very difficult on kids.
Yeah, there's no checks and balances all of a sudden.
No, now
if you
want to
be the sugar for breakfast, lunch, and dinner guy, well, good for you.
That's right.
It's pizza every night, kids. You love dad the best, don't you? Or mom, whoever, you know, whoever.
That's right.
All right. Dee Dee's been hanging on. She's in somewhere in Illinois, very vague. Hello, Dee Dee.
I am. you want my question right now?
Yes, please.
I just want to know if I have a legal right to sue. I was in I went to the hospital, had a heart attack, and went to the hospital. And I went the second day I was there, they had to perform surgery. They put three stents in and a pacemaker. I was there 6 days. They sent me to rehab. I was at rehab for 12 days. And, no, I'm a liar. For 9 days. And I start getting, in the afternoon, I wasn't feeling good. I have to admit, the head nurse asked me if she should call the ambulance. I said, no, I wasn't feeling that bad as yet, okay? But when the night shift came on, it got so bad. I had so much pressure on my chest and that I couldn't breathe. So I kept pressing the emergency button in the room. And I'd see them in the hall, and I was calling out. I was calling out, help me, I need help. They didn't bother for 3 hours. I called. I was afraid I was going to lay there and die. So I called the village ambulance service. They came in, and they had to give me oxygen and everything, and they took me back to the hospital for another 6 days. Now, the paramedic asked the nurse why they didn't answer the emergency button in my presence. And she says, well, maybe it was broken. Do I have a right to sue them?
Okay, so there's a bunch of parts to your question. First of all, I can't answer definitively because I don't do this kind of work, and lawyers who do this kind of work will have a doctor look over the records to see if there's any technical negligence, which would be like a breach of what we call standard of care. So what is the normal standard of care, and did they do something wrong?
A nursing retirement type of home.
Okay, no, and it's the same. They still have to administer medical care in a way that's not negligent. So the question here is, did they do something that deviated from the standards? So certainly, if the button wasn't working, certainly if they should have been taking your vital signs and seeing that you were in a cardiac arrest or you were in distress, the fact that you had to call an ambulance from a place that was supposed to be taking care of you, it sounds like there may have been negligence. The real question is, and this is the one that people get upset about, there has to be a significant amount of damages, okay, harm to your body, medical bills that related directly to that negligence. So had they done the right thing, would you have been in a better position? Would you still have had those problems? Would you still have spent another 6 days in the hospital?
Probably.
So maybe even though there was negligence and they did something wrong, maybe it's not a lawsuit because you didn't have a significant amount of loss that resulted from it. But again, you might want to email me your information, and I can give you a name of a lawyer who can look this up for you. I mean, you know, they spend the time. They look over the records if orally they think there's something there. Yeah. But they might say the same thing to you that I'm saying to you, which is, sounds like a good case, but, you know, sorry, but if you had died, it would have been a great case, you know, but who wants to talk like that? But that's the nature of litigation in the realm of medical malpractice.
How would Dee Dee email you?
Dee Dee, you can email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com or call me at 312-332-7800.
Good luck, Dee Dee. Yeah, it's a harsh way to look at things, but it's reality.
Yeah.
You know, it was horrible inconvenience. Did it really mess you up more than you were already messed up? Did it make things worse?
And again, people say, well, whoa, I could have died. And then what? You know, I mean, don't we want to stop doctors or nursing homes or whatever from doing something bad? The problem is, if you're a lawyer and you do this kind of work, you're going to hire a doctor to testify that there's a case. Then you're going to hire a doctor to testify at depositions and trial. That might be $50,000 right there.
Okay.
Then you file. Then you have 3 years of litigation. And you spend, you know, maybe 1,000 hours of your time pursuing a case, and at the end of the day, the jury says, I think there's negligence, but I'm going to give you $2,000.
Right.
And then the client gets two-thirds of that. So it's not a business decision that most lawyers make.
And that's the line that people, like you say, people get upset because there is a line between the law and business. And
yes.
Sometimes something is legal, but it doesn't make sense to pursue it. And you've said that even with small claims, with all different kinds of things that we've talked about here.
Cost benefit. Just,
right. You got to look at the bottom line.
And legal stuff is expensive. It just is. And people have an idea that, you know, if I was wronged, there is a remedy and I should be able to afford it. And that really is not the case. And that's not me.
You. No, it's not you. It's the system.
Yeah.
Welcome to America.
Yeah,
right, Cody?
Exactly.
Cody blames inflation. No, what do you blame? He always blames something. All right. How do people get a hold of you this week?
You can call me at 312-332-7800 or email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
And you'll be on with Steve Cochran Wednesday morning. 6:40, and we will see you next Sunday,
all
correct?
Right. Happy Father's Day to everyone.
All right. Have a great week. We will come back in a moment and say goodbye. It's WGN. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being a part of the program. We'll talk to you again next Sunday night at 6. Rick Kogan comes your way on the other side of the news. Thanks, Roger. Happy Father's Day, buddy.
Thanks, you too.
I hope now that you did your laundry today, I don't know what you're going to do on Tuesday, but I hope you just have a wonderful, wonderful Tuesday as well.
Thank you, sir. You have a great week.
Thank you. I will do my best. Thanks, Cody, for whatever it is that you do, too. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago at WGNradio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio. That's right. The Orb will handle all the rest. The news is sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. It is 9 o'clock. Here's Roger Badish.